and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 141, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Oh, he sounds good with his new microphone. Look at
that.
Yeah,
I got the new mic.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, he's got the same microphone as me as well.
Yeah.
Have you got both microphones? I've just got this sort of thing that's like, looks like I'm out of a spaceship. You know the thing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
UFO type thing.
Yeah. Have you got like a glass fishbowl on your head?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did have one of all the fucking foams falling off it. It looks like a, it looks like it's done its days. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Upgraded.
Yeah. To a pros. And when I say pros, I mean prostitutes.
Yeah. To be fair, prostitutes get paid.
Oh dear. Yes, the other voice you can hear is the man whose bedroom is called Valhalla. It's Mr. Yep. Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Hello. how are we? Welcome back, Tony. That's all we've got to say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good show last week, lads. I'd listen on the train.
Oh,
awesome.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's always odd when there's one of us missing. Doesn't feel right.
It doesn't. It's strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a bit of a taste of that today because we did the interview. You did some interviews yesterday, didn't you?
Didn't we this week?
We've got a lovely bit of interview for you. Actually, it's about an hour and a half, folks. So you've got plenty to get your teeth around.
Strapping for that.
Yeah. But that's to come, and we'll explain more about it in a moment. But yeah. You know what else is exciting?
Is it Comic House?
Yay!
Yay!
ComicHouse.com. Yes, as you know, it's the place if you desperately need to get your fix of independent comics. And if you're listening to this show, that's probably the case, let's face it.
Yes.
I mean, why else would people listen to us?
Sex reasons.
Profiling.
That was good, but also Tony's was sex reason. That sounds like the worst band you'd We are
you
sex reason.
Sex reason.
Amazing. As is comichouse.com. Yes, if you want to get your independent comics, then go to Comic House. On the website, there's a massive library of comics that's just growing with every day and every week. What sort of stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
On the latest update email, we've got Vampirella by Grant Morrison. Got the Army of Darkness Volume 2. I think that's the second half of the film. They kind of, it's like a painterly style. I can remember it used to run in that collection called Carnage that was released in the UK.
Yeah,
it was in there.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's at least six issues of Rock of the Reds on there.
Yes, I've been reading that actually in preparation for my interviewing of John Wagner. Yeah, it's really good. I tell you guys, really good.
I've not read that one, so I'm gonna have to
do a little round table on that one day because it's basically Roy the Rovers meets 2000 AD. It's got that real sort of fun, weird, twisted humour to it as well. Yeah, I think you'd like it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you read that on the Comic House app, was it?
I did. Yes.
Yes. Yes. There's a Comic House app as well. It's available now. And you can sign up. It's like Netflix for comics. You get there's a 14-day free trial, but for only £3 a month, that's the subscription. You get access to all of the comics we mentioned, not to mention a huge library of independent greats such as Captain Cosmic. Is that Andy Clift's book, which is just tearing up?
He's put an animation of that on today online, isn't he? I saw it. Looks
that looks great. Yeah, it's really good.
There's a Kickstarter coming soon, which we cannot wait for. So if you want to find out more, then basically go to comichouse.com and just sign up and just enjoy independent comics. That's what it's all there for.
Mm. Speaking of Kickstarters, you started the Kickstarter Thursday thing, didn't you, Vince?
Yes.
Is it Thursdays?
Yes. Yeah. We're currently living in a world where if you turn your head, you'll probably bump into a Kickstarter. and everyone's talking about them.
Or a pair of balls.
Yeah, and certainly some people have said I really tried but it's just I can't take you anywhere, Tony.
I know. You take me spinning next week.
I know and we'll talk about that later. Yes. But there's loads of Kickstarters everywhere. And we constantly get emails and we get call out, you know, people tag us in on Twitter or social media or whatever. But we're not in the, we're not necessarily in the business. We can't talk about every Kickstarter. We haven't got enough time in the day. We've got to talk about the books we read and everything else and interviews and brilliant guests. So we thought we're putting a plan into place that, on Twitter, just if you have a Kickstarter, comic Kickstarter on the go, and you want us to retweet to all our followers, etc., blah blah blah, then if you tweet us at the Awesome Pod with details of your Kickstarter, we'll retweet it and tell people to check it out, and that will happen every Thursday from now on with the hashtag. Yes, we've even got a hashtag, aren't we trendy?
Yep, I know exactly what one of them is.
What is it, Tony?
I'm not 100% sure.
Oh. I can't even remember the bloody hashtag now.
I don't know what it is.
The hashtag is Kickstarter Callout.
Yeah, just testing you there. Yes. Good. Well done.
So be on the lookout for our tweet on Thursday of every week. Get in touch with us and we'll retweet it and spread the word. If you do
it's just Thursday.
It's just Thursday. If you do it any other time of the week, if you email us, you know, we'll probably check them out. But we're not going to retweet them. We're not going to do anything like that.
Literally inundated with them, weren't we? The first time you did it. And it turned into some kind of argument on Twitter. Did you see that? There was some weird argument going on that we kept getting tagged into. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything about what's going on here. I don't understand it.
What happened? I didn't see any of that.
Somebody said about somebody pulling out. Someone said, oh, someone in this chain of tweets has done
pledged.
Then they didn't pay or something, and it's like, oh, and then somebody said something, and whatever. I got bored.
Well, there you go.
So to be fair, we do get loads, don't we? We do get, and we can't support everyone's Kickstarter. I'm sorry. No. As much as we love you all, we just can't. We ain't got the time, and I ain't got the energy to do it. So
there's been points on the show when the shout outs can be a good 10 minutes of Kickstarter if we mention them all, 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we don't want to really be that sort of, you know, because then it's just basically advertising, isn't it?
You don't want to channel this bloody just all advertising all the time.
Yeah.
That's just that'd be fucking boring.
Yeah. But
we have enough trouble talking about the ones we're actually in ourselves.
Yeah.
Never mind anyone else.
I have trouble saying any sort of paragraph without Tony putting balls in it somewhere.
Balls.
So yes, but we do want to get the word out about your Kickstarter, so get in touch with us on Thursday on Twitter, and we'll spread the word. So there you go,
hashtag balls.
Speaking of balls, no that's a terrible segue, but not only are you back, Tony, but you've got a bit of news, haven't you?
I mean we've already broken this news for those who signed up to mine and Nick's mailer. But it's been bubbling for a few months now, and you guys know. I've been talking to you guys about it. You're like my confidants, my advisors, my conciliaries. And I've been offered a job, or a freelance role, as perhaps is the best description of it, at Nobrow. And I've been chatting to the guys there, Zoe and Sam and some of the other people there, about it. It's not a full-time role. It's just a freelance role. But I can't really say what I'm doing there because it's a bit still in the planning. But there's a little bit of everything going on with me around there, so, and I'm really excited. As you all know, they're a company that we absolutely fucking love.
Yeah.
And so more news soon. But I just wanted to say about it, more to say thanks to everyone who sent me some lovely messages. I got some really, really nice messages. One from our guest, actually, Ryan, sent me a really nice email. Everyone who sent an email saying congratulations, well done, hope it goes well, and all that sort of thing. For everyone who sent me an out the blue email that said, "Oh, have you? Do you want to look at my book and you get a show them at Nobrow?" You can fuck right off. To be fair, but there you go.
Sorry about those emails, Tony.
It's great news. They're a great company.
Nice
one.
Yeah,
your foot's not even in the door yet. You're kind of. No. I haven't got your induction pack, and people are already saying, "Oh yeah, flog this for us."
But well done, Tony. We're very excited about what's to come.
Definitely. You know a little bit of it, so
Something coming up that I'm looking forward to immensely.
Yeah,
good. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
I must say, Tony, the dress looks lovely.
It does. It looks nice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's 10 years of Nobrow. Nobrow 10 comes out very soon, which you can pre-order on their site, which I got to see a peek of the other day. Which they haven't had one out for a couple of years now, but they used to produce a sort of art, illustration, comic collection every couple of years, and it's fucking amazing. This one is absolutely gorgeous with some really interesting names in it. Mm. And of course, the other thing I got to see is I got to see the first episode of Hilda, which is which is fucking amazing. People are going to lose their shit over that, I guarantee. People will absolutely love it.
When is the? Yeah, so, have they announced the release date for that?
I think it's September. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
September on Netflix. So watch out for that. So, they've just got it so right. It looks so like the. And I know Luke's done something. The creator has done some. He's written some of the episodes as well. So he's had some. They've done the right thing and got the creators on board. And it's very like the comic. I can't say any more than that. But when you see it, you will absolutely love it. You'll just fall in love with Hilda. It's like the nicest, cutest, funnest. But like, it's still a bit edgy for kids. You know, for anyone who's read it, it's still a bit scary, isn't it? You know.
Well, I find that the best sort of kids stuff doesn't talk down to them, does it? You know, they want to be scared.
There's that element of sort of unknown and danger in those books.
Like, there really isn't there. Yeah.
There could be a threat from these things, and you really feel that in the story, even though it's a kid's story.
Yeah,
it's really well done.
Yeah, I know you've been reading it to your saucepan, haven't you?
Yeah, I read some last year. I've not up to the most current run, but he was loving it.
I just need to say that for anyone out there who doesn't understand Tony's Cockney rhyming slang, a saucepan is a child, because saucepan lid. Kid.
Let's have a Danny Dyer day.
Oh, Doug. Dyer hard.
I mugged him right off.
Do what?
I'd like to thank Johnny T's mate as well, because he got me a Danny Dyer tea towel. It's quite nice.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
Lovely. Yeah, it's amazing. It does look brilliant. Yes, maybe later on in the year, who knows? We may have a Hildy sort of show, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know.
Because I haven't read it yet. So,
mate, you will love it.
It'll be a good chance for me to get caught up on it and read them all.
In fact, I've got a copy here. I'm going to put it aside and I'm going to bring it with me to Swindon for you, so you can have a look.
Tony,
you will love it, mate.
You don't have to do that.
Yeah, no, I think, just because I think, it's one of those books I just want to spread the love around it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I know Ken Reynolds reads it to his kids, and lots of people have got right on board it, you know. Yeah, so there you go. Good.
Brilliant, so there you go. Already amazing stuff. And we have something very special for you now. Yes, Tony just mentioned the name Ryan. What could he mean? Well, a few weeks ago, one of our recommendations on this show was the book Eternal, by Ryan K. Lindsay, Eric Zavadsky, and D. Cuniff. And Tony, stop laughing at my my professionalism.
I thought Brian Kent had left. But this is a very Brian Kent moment there.
Oh, I try, people. I really do. You know I do. It's like herding cats. But anyway, Eternal, we love that book on this show. And I know a lot of people had picked up the book before we spoke about it. It was already making waves. A lot of people have picked it up after, which is probably nothing to do with us anyway. And I think everyone who's read it can agree it's definitely going to be in a lot of people's best of lists from the end of the year.
And you'll hear me hint heavily that I haven't got a physical copy and no one bites in this episode.
You whore.
No.
Yes, we were lucky enough to chat to a couple of its creators. We were planning for all three, but unfortunately Eric was quite sick. He's quite sick at the moment. So if you're listening, Eric, get well soon, because a lot of us here have been really ill recently, so we know what it's like.
We're still coming for you. Don't worry about it.
Yes, you're definitely going to be on a future show. We managed to speak to Ryan and Dee to find out more about the book, how it came to be, and the collaboration process from three different creators from across the globe, because you've got Australia, you've got Canada, and you've got Ireland. So, you know, and they've all come together, they're all on the same page and created one hell of a book. So how does that happen? So
they're also on the same page as us, because they actually got our ridiculous humour.
Yeah.
It was we stayed on with them for a good while afterwards, just laughing, didn't we? It was good.
Yeah. We were originally, it was just going to be a short, sharp hours interview, but you know what it's like, people, when you get people talking about comics, it goes a bit longer. So be prepared for the next hour and a half of this interview, because and it's great stuff, it's fantastic, and you'll find out more about the book and about their other work. So without further ado, here is the interview for your listening pleasure. Okay, folks, we're now joined by the creators of the magnificent book Eternal, which a few weeks ago you heard us rave about on this show, and I know a lot of our listeners are massive fans of it and have picked it up from the shelves. So,
if
they can find it, yeah, I had to get someone.
Sold out, isn't it?
Yeah, I got it digital, and I had to get someone else to get it for me as a physical copy because it was nowhere near me. So, yeah, so we're hugely excited about this, and I know our listeners are as well. So, without further ado, let's introduce them. First up is a writer of the book itself. Also, he's known for the likes of Dear Editor, Negative Space, and Beautiful Canvas, another amazing book.
Yeah.
And he's returning to the show triumphantly. It's Mr. Ryan K. Lindsay. Hello.
Hey, Ryan. Fellas, thank you for having me back. I obviously didn't blow my chance last time, so I'm going to re-invite.
There's still time, my friend.
Yeah.
There's
well, Tony, yeah, Tony was not with us last time you were on the show, so you're quite excited.
I wasn't, was I?
No.
Yeah.
No.
We're old friends, aren't we, Ryan? We've known each other for years.
We do go back quite a way. It's true.
All the stories they could tell. We are also joined by the colourist of the book. He's responsible for the beautiful colours within the pages, but he's also lent his glorious hues to the likes of Redneck, Return to Whisper, and the upcoming Her Infernal Descent, which looks brilliant. It's Cunniff. Hello.
How you doing, guys?
Dude,
thanks for having me on.
Pleasure, man. We've had your name quoted by quite a few people recently. Yeah.
Yes,
it was about time.
Yes.
Oh yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, and we haven't had too many colorists on the show, so this is quite exciting as well. Now, the plan was to get all three of them on the show this week, but unfortunately, Mr. Eric Zawadzki, Ryan actually told me how to say it. No, Ryan told me how to say it, so I'm not going to take complete. But he's unfortunately not well, so get well soon, because I know there's a lot of it going about. So, but we will say this off the bat, the artwork is some of the best you will see all year.
Tremendous. Yeah.
Hands down. So expect us to talk a bit about that. Now, we're only a couple of months into 2018, but Eternal came right out of the gate to kick us all in the face, in the best kind of way, I think. And I know it's going to be in a lot of people's best of lists come the end of the year. But this book certainly had an interesting sort of a journey, didn't it? So how did this strange, unique and wonderful book come to be?
It was one of those things where initially, like, I can't remember the very initial spark. I mean, I wrote it nearly 4 years ago, at least started writing it sort of nearly 4 years ago, and it was as a one shot because I'd realized 4 years ago that as fun as generating big ideas and pitching mini series and putting together pitch assembly teams and then not getting greenlit, as much as a fun hamster wheel that is, I wanted to have completed things I could show. So I wrote probably about half a dozen one shots, and Eternal was one of them. And I don't honestly remember that initial spark of an idea, but I just remember the Viking ghost story very quickly solidified itself as sort of a little niche genre I very much wanted to get into. And so that was hot on the heels after Headspace, which I'd made with Eric, and we'd brought Dee in as well. And so I was keen, obviously, to work with her. You work with somebody like Eric, and you instantly want to try to figure out some sort of trick to keep the relationship going. I mean, a lot of creators and a lot of writers do that with people that they can see they instantly click with. They just think, I do the same thing with Sammy Cavella, where we've done Dear Editor and Chum and Beautiful Canvas. And if 2 days ago an email stands, the next project we're going to do. And so, you want to have these really fantastic collaborations continue. And so I took it to Eric, and he loved it. He was really into the script, which, you know, is the best feeling for a writer when that you can see that they're into it. And so he was like, yeah, all right, well, let's talk about it. And as we sort of spitballed over it, he got the dregs picked up at Black Mask. And that sort of swallowed a large amount of his time, obviously. And so I didn't want to get in his way. And just sort of had to bow out a little bit and just go, make the dregs. And as we all know, the dregs with writers Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson and Dee again.
Yeah, I was reading it today, and very good it is. Yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's the sort of thing where as soon as Eric sent me issue one, I was like, yeah, look, put all your energy and effort into this. This book is dynamite on every level. And so, we basically just put it on the back burner for ages, like years. And then I went to Emerald City last year in Seattle, sort of a year ago like last week.
Yeah.
And was tabling with Eric, and we're sitting there, and you know, you've got a lot of time just to sit there and chat. And so I'd sort of brought up the idea of, you know, we should get back into the Eternal one shot if you're looking for stuff like coming up out of, post the dregs. And he was absolutely keen and sort of realized he had the right time in his schedule to sort of smash into it. And so it was after that we really sort of escalated things and got them sorted, which, you know, is just a coup. And in that time, it also speaks volumes that I didn't sort of take the script and go, oh, well, you're busy, Eric, I'll just go find somebody else. There really was, you know, nobody else.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And he just kind of ran with it as well, because you've got some lovely sort of back matter in the back of the book that actually sort of talks about how this, because this was originally, how many pages did you envision this book?
Oh, yeah, I was reading about this, yeah.
I think it was just a 24-page one, you know, just sort of like a single issue. The whole idea of a one-shot is it's manageable because an artist can kind of fit it in.
Yeah.
So you don't want to make it, you don't want to sort of give them a, you know, 110-page graphic novel and say, you know, just squeeze this in for me, because that's a dick move. but doing like one-shot is manageable, and if you find the right people to collaborate with, you'll sort of make it happen. Mm. And I'd sent the script to Eric, and he was like, oh, yeah, there's some good, you know, Eric is an amazing storyteller, which is the sort of thing that, you know, I love and also scares me shitless at the same time.
Yeah, you can see down there, mate. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
He doesn't need me, and he just hasn't figured it out yet. But he's on his way to figuring it out.
That's the secret of all comic writers, though, isn't it, Ryan? I think
we're all pretty superfluous. Yeah,
we're all clinging on, mate. But one day they'll realise the true art lies in the art, colours, and letters. We just make shit up. Yeah.
I mean, you got people like Geordie Belair figuring out she can write well, and I'm like, oh yeah. Man, everybody in the creative team can do my job. This is horrible.
I blame Dave. So, blame him.
Yeah. And so, Eric was like, I see some of the themes at play and, you know, there's some things I want to tease out. Are you cool with that? And after, like, we probably spent a year together on Headspace, maybe a touch more.
Yeah.
I have utter faith in Eric. It's very rare that I force his hand or, like, push him in a direction or overscript for him or anything like that. I just sort of let him run wild. And so I was like, yeah, man, just see what you think and just hit me back. And so he sent back the first round of thumbnails, and I think it was 41 pages.
So this is the stuff in the back matter, isn't it? If people have bought the book or they download it on Comixology, you can see it in the back, can't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, how he sort of then just broke a lot of it down. And so that was wild. And I was like, oh, like, I love it, but you have to then draw more. And he was like, yeah, look, I love the project enough that I will. And I mean, if that doesn't speak volumes, I don't know what does. Like, he was just like, oh, absolutely. Yeah, well. And so the initial plan was we were just going to kickstart it. Being a one-shot, there's no market for that. And so we just thought, well, you know, I've had success on Kickstarter with one-shots. It'll be another one into the cycle. It'll be great. We'll make some money. We'll get it out in the world. And so he set to work on it. And he was just like, look, if we're going to do it, let's have some fun. So we went with the European sort of size pages, the different landscape size. He kept talking about like Frank Quietly level detail art. He really wanted to like get into it. And so those fight scenes, he wanted the physics to make sense. He wanted like the hair to flick and move in the right direction, everything. And so he really took his time on it. And we figured, you know, it's a passion project behind the scenes on the side. Why not? And so, yeah, he sort of got to work. And by that stage of the process, it's just a matter of me just sitting back and enjoying the show, which is nice. I just get a few months of, like, art and inks and D's colours coming through. And
I was going to ask about that. So how did you become involved, D? I'll take it because you'd worked with them before. Or was it an easy option for you, Ryan, was it? Or how did that happen?
Well, I'd done a little bit of work with Ryan before on Headspace. I did a couple of fill-in pages, and you know, Ryan's always out there on Twitter, and he seems to be a very prolific creator and somebody that, you know, I really wanted to work with again.
Yeah.
And again, Eric as well. Just, you know, I'd work with Eric forever if I could, because he's an incredible artist. And
because you're working with him on the dregs as well, aren't you? Is that right?
I did the dregs as well, yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, the thing about comics, I think, is it's very much about relationships, you know, so I, so
okay.
Yeah. The Dregs was with Lanny and Zach and Eric, and then this book now, Eternal, is with Ryan and Eric, and then I'm also working on another new book now with Lanny and Zach. So you know, when you work, when you find a team of people that you like to work with or you work well with, it's you know, it's a no-brainer to get back in bed with them, you know.
Yeah. I get you. Now, how much did the, because the colour's a big part of the story for me as well, Ryan, in this. How much was that sort of backwards and forwards between you? Because you've got, for those that haven't read it, you've almost set tones by using colours on certain pages, don't you? You know.
Yeah, well, I don't think that there was too much back and forth over the colours.
No.
I think, you know, Ryan doesn't really had really no notes whatsoever. Eric had very few notes as well. I think again, there's that thing about teamwork that people, you know, I wouldn't ever email Ryan and say, oh, look, that, you know, you've written something wrong there. And I don't think I'd never email Eric and say, oh, you've drawn something wrong there. And I, you know, I think, you know, we trust each other to do our jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we do spot something, you know, overtly terrible, you know, it will be pointed out. But, you know, Eric, had, I don't think there was any notes.
Okay, because to me, a couple of the moments, if you don't mind, D, is the real striking moments in this for me were the you almost use a sort of giallo coloured blood in it, don't you? It's there's a real moment where blood's almost a motif. Is that right, or would you say?
Yeah, well, you know, it's very much for me. It was very much about the landscape.
Mm. Okay, yeah,
and you know, it was very landscapes were very. You know, desaturated and earthy.
Yeah.
And you know, and the blood really, you know, you know, there was snow and you know, mist and you know, yellow skies and you know,
the
blood
grays really... and browns of the costume.
Yeah. So you know, that blood was used almost to punctuate pages. And again, those red pages as well, they were punctuation.
I mean, you've got a bit of everything, haven't you? Because you've got fire, you've got ice, you've got blood, you've got skies of different hues. I mean, when you're looking at like the script and you're seeing the artwork, you know, was it exciting to think of all the different like palettes you could use on those pages?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the projects like this, you know, that are a real opportunity to try something new. And I think, you know, that pretty much every project I work on, it's like I start off with a plan and think, you know, how am I going to approach this? You know, I didn't want to do it like I'd done the Dregs.
Okay.
Because there'd be no point in rehashing the same work again. And, you know, I didn't want it to look like the Dregs in the same way. I'm sure that, like, Eric didn't draw it the same way he drew the Dregs.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a great opportunity to try new things. And, you know, obviously, you know, there was when the project was brought to me, there was a couple of days of oh, great, I know fuck all about Vikings. So it's a great opportunity to go back and read Northlanders again. And, you know, watch it onto Netflix. Okay, let's lose myself in a Viking hole here. And, you know, there was... a load of great. There's actually the best one is a I think it's a Norwegian comedy called Norsemen or Northmen.
Oh, I've seen that song. I haven't watched it yet though. Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious. It's absolutely brilliant. So, you know, it was a great opportunity to just watch a load of Viking stuff and read a load of Viking stuff.
And certainly the modern sort of Viking films, like you say, they're always desaturated, don't they? They always have, they're not bright and colourful like the Kirk Russell Viking.
But that, you know, there's also
Kirk Douglas, I think.
In the style of the format of the book with the European influence, that there was a touch of Tintin and Asterix in there as well. It's not.
Yes, I see that. Yeah, I noticed you write about that in your essay, don't you, in the back? But I definitely see that. I reread it again today. Yeah, definitely.
Ryan, I mean, when you saw it all come together, I mean, this is a long gestating project. And I mean, it was a few years in development, but when you're seeing the story grow in length And then when Eric and Dee get together and you're seeing these final pages, which some of them are absolutely wordless, one of my favourite pages probably of the year, which is a testament to all three of you, because I can almost see the written word, even though there's no words on it, is the burning the boat, the burning sort of Viking ship, and it's just all black. I mean, that could be a print, that could be a select print on its own. I think that's one of the best pages of the year. But when you were seeing pages like that came back in one word, what was your reaction?
Gobsmacked.
Yeah,
it's, you take something out of my head that it just looks so much better on the page. And I mean, the whole process was sort of not too easy. I mean, it came across too easy because, you know, the collaborators know each other and we trust each other, as Dee said. And I mean, it came down to that initial point where Eric was like, all right, we're clipping along. We need to bring in a colorist. And I was like, well, who do you want to get? And he was like, well, Dee. I'll reach out to him. And then you land Dee. Like, if it's that simple a process and we've all worked together before in different ways, you know, it's sort of going to click. And Dee was right. I don't think I gave a single coloring note. And to be honest, rarely do, because the hell do I know about coloring? Especially in comparison to the colorists that I work with. And I've been really lucky to work with Dee and Marissa Louise and Triona Farrell, who have done these amazing jobs at bringing all these different sort of genres and worlds to life. Unless there's like a specific, usually like, oh no, that character's hair was blonde or something, which again, these colorists don't make those problems. But if they did, that'd be a note I'd give. But otherwise, every now and then I might call for a color cue in the script, but I try to keep that rare as well, because if I sort of say, all right, in this last panel, we want to have blue for this, the colorist then either has to make sure the whole page will fit that in whatever sort of accepting or contrasting way, or it'll just sort of stick out in an odd way. I don't know. Like, I know colorists, much like artists, they work with the page as a big piece of art, and I sort of get out of the way on that front, because I know I know they can do their job and do it insanely well and better than I would be able to give notes. So, yeah, as Dee stuff came in, I always make a point of, like, especially when batches of pages come in, I'll write a big email, and I'll talk about each page and just talk about usually what I like, because there's often not a lot that I have to give notes and go, oh, could we tweak this or whatever. It's usually just me saying, oh, I love the way this panel works, because I don't know, I think positive feedback helps, because then you can say, oh, okay, so you noticed that on a page. That must be a really good, you know, trick. I'll keep that up my sleeve. I know when I work with editors and worked with Dan Hill on this, and I've worked with Dan for heaps of my creator-owned stuff, he's great because he asks the right questions and he edits well, but he also gives little bits of praise and makes you realize what's going really well.
It's important, isn't it? Definitely.
It makes a huge difference, because it's I know personally, if I get editorial notes and it's only like, here are the five things we need to fix or that went wrong, I just sort of sit there and go, oh, okay, so everything else was like a C minus and passable? Is that what I'm hearing? Because I'm not hearing anything positive. I mean, my brain's a swamp and shouldn't be the standard, but it's that thing where you don't hear anything and you go, oh, okay. But if you get a little bit of, oh, this is good and this is great. And I mean, you can flick through Eternal and you constantly have to stop and just go, oh, that first page of Viff and Grimmer, that sky's amazing. Look at the way it pops against the clouds.
Yeah.
And then you can turn it across again. And
just looking at the flower moment as well is lovely.
Yeah.
Really like that, you know. Yeah,
like, really, there's so much cool stuff in there. And so, yeah, during that process, and it's funny because I know Eric really well, and I know how, like, he used to color his own work, and I know how pedantic is probably a great word, to be honest. He is over all of that stuff. And the fact that he sort of instantly goes, yep, let's get Dee. Yep, I know Dee. I can trust him. It says to me, oh, yeah, like, Dee's got this.
Yeah,
like, we're 100%. I don't need to, like, if Eric's not questioning it, and Eric's the sort of dude that will be like, oh, you know, with the tiniest notes, here's what I saw or whatever. Like, he knows what he wants, and he's smart enough to get it, and has it in his head. But he sort of knows with Dee that we're getting exactly what the story needs.
Yeah,
and so all these things are sort of set up with these perfect overall hues, which were just so impressive, and especially to get them in print and the way that they printed on paper, I absolutely love. I think the whole book's a masterclass in just sort of visual collaboration as well as sort of visual storytelling, both for character and emotion, which is, I mean, is awesome. Like that means the project has gone above and beyond whatever I wrote, which is really exactly what you want.
Yeah, definitely.
It definitely goes beyond borders that a lot of sort of comics would. I mean, you talk about the European influence, and I can totally see it in this book. You know, this book could stand side by side with all the great books that you see in Paris and Belgium and all. You know, it's very much a worldwide book, and it's got worldwide appeal. Mm. You know, but the story itself also has this. So, like a rollicking pace to it. It's you know, it's action packed. It's tragic. It's haunting. Yeah. I mean, you know, for a project that took this long to sort of, you know, because I think that's what some people don't necessarily see. When they see the final book, they may have thought that you three guys came across and in a couple of months just churned this out. You know, for all those sort of creators out there who are who are still working on that book for months and months and months, this happens to like everyone, so you just want it to be the best it can be when it arrives, doesn't it?
Well, that's the thing, and it's easy to see projects like this disappear, where you might get an artist on board, you might get some pages done, and you've probably written it all, and then it just sort of disappears through, you know, no fault of anyone. I mean, I firmly believe if we'd pushed this book another year, Eric wouldn't have been available to me. D is just continuing to blow up and wouldn't have been available to us.
Yeah.
And then sort of where would it be? And it's a real sort of it's sort of alchemy I find making comics. It's just that magic potion at that time.
It's almost lightning in a bottle as well, that everyone came was on the same page at the same time, and like there's no notes from anyone. It almost seems too good to be true that this wonderful book, and it was
this is some kind of made up story.
This is we don't believe any of you actually. This is come on. Everyone wants to hear that I don't know, D was a monster and terrible to work with, and like Ryan, you've got loads of problems. You know, this is a brilliant book. Surely brilliant books aren't easy to do.
I can imagine D penning an email that said, "Snow, how the fuck am I meant to colour that?" He's gone quiet. See, it's true.
You know, the thing about snow is that it is a difficult thing to colour.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's choosing, you know, like snow is white, you know? and it's figuring out how to make it work, almost on an emotional level.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a story like this, so it can be blue, it can be white, it can be pink. You know, it depends on an awful lot of factors. You know, light and time of day and things like that. So
the way you have it falling in a couple of scenes, D, is really impressive.
Yeah, that was like, if you've read the back matter, when I first sat down with this, I, you know, my plan was no textures, solid black line. You know, no gradients, everything was going to be flat, very, you know. And then as the project kind of moved on, I'd done a couple of pages, it was like, oh, you know, I'm having difficulty here with separating planes just using the color. So things like the color holes on the hair and you know, speed lines and on the snowflakes, which turned a page from something that I could do, you know, in an hour to something that was taking 2 or 3 hours.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, and it's just, this is kind of one of there are projects which, you know, pay the bills, and that's all it is. You go through it and you do the job and you get it done. And then there are projects like this which you know are going to
challenge you a bit, maybe, or
satisfy you.
Right. Okay.
Artistically.
Yeah.
And emotionally, when you're working on them. So you do put that extra work in that you may not necessarily put in on another book that you're just grinding through.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. That certainly shows, dude. So, Ryan, I was going to ask you. Sorry, man, go on.
Yeah, no, just like, you know, working with Eric when with the dregs again, that was another one that was, it was, Eric didn't have many notes in that or real instructions, but Lonnie and Zach, if you read one of their scripts, they have so much planned in their scripts that you do not see on the page.
Right, okay.
You know, there's backstory about why there's something on a shelf.
God.
Yeah, and so you really have to, like, when they say, you know, there's a CD on the shelf and it's this, or there's a book, you know, I have to go and hunt down that book to see what that cover looks like in order to replicate it. And again, that's tough work. But The Dregs, again, you know, with Eric, was another book that was, you know, I knew it was something special, like this book, that I wanted to do. And I wanted, you know, when I've finished, when I've retired from working in comics, that, you know, there'll be a couple of books that I'll have had the opportunity to work on that I'll have genuinely been happy to work on.
So it's almost a calling card as well, isn't it? This is like what you can do for those, when that big, you know, and the next big job comes calling, this is what they're going to look to, isn't it? You know?
Mm. Yeah. Well, I do see it every so often. I'll be involved in a book where for about a month afterwards, there will be a flurry of emails of, hi, you don't know me, but I'm a big fan of, do you want to work on this? So, and this is when, after Eternal came out, there was about 2 weeks of literally every day, 4 or 5 emails. Do you want to work on this project? So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah, there you go. So do you give Ryan a percentage of that? Do you, or?
Hey, where's the kickback? Yeah. What's going on?
That's brilliant. Ryan, I just want to quickly ask you about one of the styles you use in the prologue, actually, because you use a sort of runic framing to it. Was that something you came up with, or was that something Eric did?
The panel borders?
Yeah.
That was Eric. I would never write that into a script. I would feel horrible doing that. there's certain things you can't do to a collaborator. And when he first came up with that idea, I was like, oh man, you're mad. And he's like, yeah, they're taking me forever, but don't they look awesome?
They do, like, awesome.
Yeah. You're insane. But then the way they thematically work in the story is as like a representation of family is beautiful and is really perfect, because you see when they pop back up and what they mean and how they matter. It's so, like, I you see panel borders used to intonate flashback and not and things like that, but I'm struggling to think of another time where panel borders have been used as a thematic.
Fables used it for a while, didn't they? Buckingham used a sort of often a sort of strange border that almost was part of the story, an extra part of the story in some of the issues.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And I know that if you look at Porcelain by Chris Wildgoose and Ben Reed, the covers have a sort of strange border to them, as if they're like a stained glass window almost.
Yeah.
Which I think works. You know, it works beautifully here. I absolutely loved it. I'm glad, I feel a bit glad for him that he didn't have to do it through the whole issue. But
It was smart to switch it off when needed, because you get that page where right at the start, and she's finished talking to Grimmer and he walks away and she walks into the cabin, and that's when it switches off. And I just love that moment, because you sort of go, oh, okay, like that first panel's still got it. And then down the bottom, she's talking to Beate's man, and it's just normal paneling, because this isn't a family connected moment anymore.
Yeah, we get the F-bomb dropped in that panel, don't we? Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
It speaks to the design of the book as well, because I love the fact that the credits page came a few pages into the story. It gave it an extra cinematic feel, which, and by breaking it up like that, completely sort of changed the tempo, you know, and it really works really well. That maybe if it didn't have that, the rhythm and flow of the story might have been a little different.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing where...
Yeah, that splash of blood is just such a nice little touch on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the sort of broken ice on the water. Yeah, really nice.
And from memory, that whole page, I think, was just Eric. I think I had the credits. We're going to play over the next page as the boats come in and they're rowing.
Oh, okay.
Memory initially in the script, but Eric was like, man, we do whatever we want. We got our own page count. Let's do it. So, I mean, that's kind of cool when, you know, when your collaborator just wants to go those extra miles and add things. It's
It's lovely, isn't it? Yeah, really good.
That's the best. Yeah.
And the other one I wanted to ask you about was the cover. How much input did you have? Because it's probably, for me, the cover of the year so far, definitely.
Mm. Oh, nice.
That the motion of her rushing across the front of the page, with the snow falling, was that you or Eric or Dee or who came up with that? Because it's almost completely white and she's in the snow, isn't she? You can tell. She stepped back with it falling in front of her, you know.
Yeah, she's really trudging through it. That was 100% Eric.
Right.
That was a really early bit that he came up with, and he really wanted to sort of blanch it out even more and have like the title much more obscured. And eventually we realized, you know, we want to sell this book and have people find it. So being obtuse, and then there's kind of, you know, it's despite your face sort of thing. So he sort of made them come forward a little bit more. But no, that was all Eric. I completely get out of his way with covers. I learned that with Headspace. Initially, we, like, you know, we would at least discuss a cover at the start, or I might come in with a loose idea, and about halfway through the series I stopped that because his stuff was just genius.
You know, I loved his work on Headspace, and I think I reviewed the first issue years ago now, he was by far, you know, from being, he was never a bad artist, and he was a good artist back then, but he's stepped his game up so much. You know, by now.
He's learned a lot of tricks and really put in a lot of effort, and just, he just comes at everything he does with so much care.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of anything he's done that's a hatchet job. He just really loved it.
Then when I saw on Twitter that pretty much all of these were traditional sort of full pages, and I looked at it, and it made me just weep. to have that precision, just little, you know, he had piles of pages that he was selling. I'm sure he must have
sold
sold all the pages by now, surely.
Because
there's not a page of this book that no one's going to want. It's beautiful stuff.
I know Dee and I got our hands on some.
It's interesting that when you get those pages, there isn't a single stray mark or mistake every line is put down thoughtfully, and you know, he knows exactly what he's doing with his pen stroke. So, like, you know, to see one of those pages actually in front of you is astounding.
Yeah.
Did you colour the cover? Did you, Dee?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Eric did that himself.
Right. Okay. It's got all your hallmarks, though, dude. I don't know. Maybe you two are working so well together now. I would.
Well,
just...
you know, I think we're sympathetic together. Absolutely.
Yeah. I get you. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, well, I would have done a better job.
He's not here, you can say. It's fine, isn't it?
You know what, I don't think I would have tackled it the same way. And I think what Eric did there was amazing with the fading it back, which I probably wouldn't have thought to do.
Yes.
Also, it speaks a lot about the story of the book, because I think, certainly when you say Viking ghost story, maybe in the hands of lesser creators, it would have been an over embellished, you know, there would have been runes and all kinds going on with the, you know, it would have been overworked, a cover like that, which, whereas I think the cover that we've got perfectly encapsulates that, because there's also a mystery. I looked at the cover and thought, I want to know more about what's going on there.
I tried not to read about it before going in.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think you're right, Vince. I think saying a Viking ghost story, you do expect lots of caves. And quite a lot of darkness, and this isn't. It's bold and brash, and it's in your face, and, you know, violent, and, you know, it's a lot of things as well as being a ghost story, isn't it, Ryan? Do you think?
Well, that's the genius. Eric, he gets it. He gets that. You know, it's not a ghost story. It's a story about a woman. It's a story about a mother, and so he boils that down in the cover quite exceptionally well. He's such a smart guy when it comes to that sort of stuff, and knowing what we're going for and how we're looking to affect the reader, so that his art and angles and panel sizes and shapes and choices can all work in league to affect the reader on that sort of sub level. And the cover's a perfect encapsulation of that, where he's brought it together. And even looking at that, and you're sort of saying, like, that Viking ghost story aspect, it was interesting to go from beautiful canvas, which Triona Farrell colored, and she went with a really sort of hyper pop color style book, which was,
reminds me a bit of like a Vertigo book or something like that. It's that sort of style.
She, and it was really cool because Sammy Cavella, the artist, and I, you know, sent her the pitch pages, and we were like, oh, you know, we'd love to bring you on board. And she'd already colored Air with Alfie Gallagher for me
Alfie's a friend of ours. We love Alfie.
Alfie's the best. And so I knew she had games, so I was just like, yeah, we'd love to get you on. And when she sent in the first pages, she had like the bright pink purple blood, and she'd really gone overboard. And I was just like, oh, I love it. And I sent her an email. I'm like, these are amazing. Yep, you've nailed it. And she got back to me and she was like, oh, I sort of went like 20% extra on everything because I'm so used to being then reined in 20% that I figured if you reined me in, I would land where I wanted to land. And you're saying I can go that far. This is weird. And I was like, no, no, I love what you've done. This is insane. No, and she's like, well, maybe we should dial it back. And I was like, oh, do we have to? And she's like, oh, well, no, I actually really like it this way. But
best carrot just throwing incident ever, by the way.
Yeah, she's so used to sort of that tamp back. And so to go from a project like that, which was this high sort of funk pop, to then go into Eternal where sort of D is using all of these similar emotional tricks, but in totally different ways, was really cool for me to sort of see how it works, because I'm still like the best way to learn coloring on my end is to watch how colorists work on your own stuff. It's something to read like all the comics out there and see how colorists color all these other stories, but to see how they're tackling sort of similar emotions that you present in the same project be a real eye-opener on the way things you are putting onto the page are brought forward, and the way that sort of D does it from project to project, and the sort of holistic approach that they bring to each project. Like D mentioning before, those rules that you set yourself at the start of a project, and the fact that you can break those rules as well. Yeah. You don't need to, you know, insanely.
I know that Higgins spoke quite a lot about it, about his Watchmen work, about it was a discussion, a tonal discussion, and I think that was a real changing point for colorist D, do you think? Because the color is so much now part of everything that happens, part of the storytelling, you know. It's not like an afterthought now, do you think?
Yeah, it's I think coloring now is appreciated and understood completely differently to how it used to be. Like I'm in my mid-40s, and I only really started this game 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
I was nearly 20 years working in advertising and publishing.
Okay.
And starting to hate what I did, and I was looking at, you know, what skills I had and how I could apply them to something creative, and comics has always been part of my life, and I kind of messed around with coloring, and honestly I didn't know that, you know, there was a job in coloring comics. And, you know, organically I kind of started flatting for people, and that turned into a thriving business where I was like, okay, fuck it, I'm just going to give up my day job, and, you know, the 20 hour a week commute and the 80 hours working in an ad agency. And then just as I started getting into this, coloring actually started, I started seeing that people really appreciated colorists and what colorists brought to a project. And, you know, there was people who've been, you know, in the industry for forever, people, you know, like Lee Lockridge and stuff like that, who I flat for still.
Okay.
And then there were people who were just starting to come, seeing like Geordie and Matt Wilson and you know, people who the general public were actually talking about.
Yeah. Elizabeth Breitwiser, I know she's, you know, Elizabeth Breitwiser is a very distinctive face in colouring as well, isn't she?
There are people that you know, will buy a project based on the colorist.
It's
just, you know, there was a time when projects were bought because of the writer or because of the artist.
Yeah.
And now people are following projects based on the colorist, which I think is incredible. And it's, you know, it's great to be part of that now. And being part of that kind of appreciated
key change.
Creative block part of the industry.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to have a book like Eternal, which it's rare that a book works on almost every single level that it's some of its parts, isn't it? I mean, don't you think, Tony? I don't think this book puts a foot wrong anywhere. That's, you know, but you can see the teamwork on the page, and like, I mean, obviously, since we've done this show and we've talked to a lot of creators, when you know a little bit of how the sausage is made, you do read books differently. You look at things differently in the way that things are put together.
I mean, we kind of read books now with the eye to reviewing them sometimes, don't we? Which is an altogether different read.
Yeah.
isn't it? Sometimes we think, oh, I've got to take notes. I've got to write, you know, because I'll be writing it down or talking about it. But I read this the first time with the intention of taking some notes because I wanted to speak to Vince about it. I knew he was going to be talking about it. And I just flew through it. I've got to tell you, I went back and had to reread it because I thought the motion that you set up on the page between panels almost is really, really nice. Yeah. I've got to tell you. Yeah, very good.
It's got, the story's got this real pulpy vibe as well. And I know, Ryan, you're a big sort of like pulp and sort of detective stories fan.
Yeah.
And I can see that on the page. And certainly with some of the narration. We haven't spoiled anything for you folks. Because,
yeah, we haven't, have we? We've done
We haven't said anything about the story. Yeah. Because seriously, read it for yourself. You know, you need to. This is a book to discover.
Yeah.
But there is one line that it may be one of my favourite lines of the year that I need to read out, and it's one of my favourite pages actually. It's when something bad is happening, but it says, when you play with magic, you come across problems. When you murder magic, you create problems. Oh
yes.
Yeah. Oh, just that page.
That's actually the line I use if I'm signing a book on for somebody. That's what the line I write in the front of the book.
That's awesome.
Because it's a great line.
Yeah.
Oh, she is. That's really cool to hear.
But it does have that real pulpy vibe to it. Like that.
Oh, I'm a sucker for the monologue, mate. Yeah. And that says pulp all over it to me. Total sucker for that.
And when you mix it with the art and the colours going on the page, seriously, when you get to this page, peeps, you'll see why we all love it. And it's
that moment speaks to where I go really right with readers and where I also sometimes go really wrong. Because it punctuates a moment where I'm being fairly obtuse as to what is actually happening. And I had some readers go, okay, so with the ghost aspect, we don't really get an explanation of like why he's a ghost or how he becomes a ghost. And for my mind as a writer and a reader, like, who cares? He becomes a ghost. That's what's important, right? And so that's why I write that line. But that line somewhat tells you, like, when you mess with magic, you know, there's going to be problems. But when you murder magic, you are creating a problem. That's what happened. In that panel right there, it's telling you what happens.
Yeah.
It's just not telling you very clearly. And I do that with a lot of my work. And I'll laugh about it with some of my other writing mates where I'm just like, no, I'd rather a good line than and she killed him and his spirit went to the netherworld to haunt her. Like, that bores the shit out of me. Like, I have no intention of writing.
It's a bit like origin stories. They bore the fuck out of me. I don't want to know how he became Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I just want to see
Or Wolverine. Yeah. I mean, I did like the origin series. I thought that was well done. But I could have quite happily not have it ever existed. Does that make sense? Yeah. I think that character...
A few people sort of ask me, like, so the sword, like that central sword that she grabs at the end, so what's the deal? And I'm like, Eric and I had a big discussion about whether we needed a few captions to sort of maybe give that sword something more. And in the end, I was like, no, I don't think it capital N needs it. And I think you can pass together the story quite well without us sort of hitting you over the head with it. In fact, lettering passes on this book was just me and me slicing lines out.
Mm.
Or a few times Eric slicing lines out. So I like he sent a page in and I was like, oh, cool, you're gonna letter it? He's like, no, yeah, it's lettered. Like,
come on. So, I was going to ask, so Eric lettered the entire book as well?
Yeah, which is great because then he's got control over every visual flow going on.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah.
He's kind of a triple threat.
Yeah.
With the drags, he drew it and he lettered it and he was going to colour it, but he ran out of time in terms of deadline. So that's where I came on board was when he was like, oh, fuck, I can't do this.
I'll tell you what he does as well. He draws some fucking weird goats. That's the scariest thing.
Well, the goats and the wolves were actually my favourite bits of the book.
The goats. I'm going to write a goat scene every time I can.
Yeah, let's have more goats. Well, Ryan, do you find that that's something you often sort of shy away from interacting with when someone asks you about something in the book? When they say to you, oh, what about this? Couldn't it be this and this and this? And you think, well, the book stands on its own almost. I want people just to enjoy the book. Is that something?
Yeah, I've been pretty open in sort of saying like Negative Space, my book at Dark Horse for Dom Gianni. It's about like these emotion-eating monsters. And people are like, Well, so how are they eating exactly emotions? And I'm like, well, to be honest, I don't really care. I mean, I can tell you, and it would be a really boring sequence on the page, because you might as well say to someone, so when you have your, like, cornflakes, how does your body digest that? I don't think that's very interesting. So we, like, we could have done it, but it just sort of wasn't necessary. And things like that, it's, I mean, with a lot of my stories, there's this sort of mild horror thing underneath it. Like, imagine watching John Carpenter's The Thing and having to have, like, its childhood explained on the other planet before it came. Like, no, the thing just appeared out of the sky. Like, just deal with it. It just replicates people on a cellular level. Like,
or
just,
the best,
just why,
the best
why
example
the
of it is Alien. Why do you need to explain where they came from? I don't.
You can see why that's a bad idea, because it doesn't work every time.
Or do we really need Jessica? Do we really need Jessica Jones's childhood?
Yeah,
you know,
little, topical.
Thank you.
The hottest takes. But that's the thing where I'm like, and I know, because someone came out to my con table once and he was like, "Dear editor, so like, how was he born?" And this is a few years ago, and I was like, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Well, I can't buy the book if you don't know. And I was like, why does it matter? He's a guy with a deer head. He's what matters?
By cesarean, obviously.
By cesarean.
All natural birth, baby. All natural.
Oh, how do you think of the damage downstairs if a deer came out of there?
Well, it was a male giving birth too, so imagine what he did. Like, it's horrible. No, but like at that stage, I was like, look, I don't know, and I don't think he needs to know. And as it turned out, I found out a really good origin story for him. Like when I was writing Beautiful Canvas. And so I was like, oh, well, I guess now I know the nitty gritty. But stuff like that, I don't want to belabor the point. I'd rather have a good line, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd rather have that when you murder magic, you create problems.
We don't need to know everything, do we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't know what side shoes they wear.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it'll all sort of come out, which is fine. And one thing I do want to mention, though, about this book is we've sort of talked about everybody, but I do want to make special mention of Courtney Maynard, who did the wallpaper end pages.
Oh, they're lovely. Yeah, really nice. Yeah.
Amazing she got them to suit the book. That they just flow as this opening closing punctuation point. I think she did a beyond stupendous job. That's another one of those things where like we give like Here's a PDF of our book, and it's a Viking ghost story. What sort of end pages do you want to come up with?
Yeah.
And just sort of try to get like the reason I brought her on is because she did the wallpaper credits pages for Four Kids Walk Into a Bank.
Oh, I was going to ask if she did them, because they're phenomenal.
Yeah. They're amazing. So I was like, I just want you to do like that for us. So if I then sent an email saying, and here is how you will lay it out. Well, she's not doing that for us. She's doing what I told her. So we sort of really got out of her way, and she came up with this print that is, I love it. And again, that's another thing that we wanted to do with the project, something like that, where it almost feels like it's a sort of picture book that you're getting into, and it has these end pages. I wanted them to print on the inside of the covers, but that is a whole other printing process requiring a lot more money, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's that thing where you...
Are we getting another one, Ryan, or...?
Another
in this series or with any of the characters or?
Oh, I did love that when this book launched that week, the most keen email that came through was from D. He was like, all right, boys, we landed. What's next? Let's do it.
I think one a year for the next 10 years would be great.
Get on it. I'd buy it.
I don't think that's unattainable. I think Eric could fit it in. It's not like he's got all the heavy lifting to do.
You know what these artists are like, Ryan? They just sit in their houses drawing. It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I've seen the amount of stuff they watch on Netflix.
I see that on Twitter too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not like we were working 18 hours a day.
I can't imagine it. I don't believe it of Eric. He's too handsome. Same as you, Dean. No one looks that good and it doesn't get a full night's sleep.
I'm a fat, balding, middle-aged man. I got married like 20 years ago.
We've given up, my friend. I'm like that. Yeah.
I felt really bad when I got married because I had spent like
me too.
The previous 2 years being really fit. I used to run half marathons. I looked all right. And then I got married and for some reason was just like, I don't need to exercise. And it just rolled off. I was like, what a horrible human I am. And my wife is insanely better looking than me. And so I really should, like, I'm still trying to keep up.
I feel there's a comic somewhere there.
Yeah.
There's got to be. Yeah. I write some sad protagonists, but I don't think I could write myself. That's
too a diary comic.
Is it too tragic? Even.
Yeah, it would be too much. Yeah,
too and sexy.
It would
be
unbelievable. Would be no one's idea of fun. No one would want to work on it. No one would want to read it. Although, I mean, we could do it as a little one shot. We get Eric in. We make
now, last time
sad.
You said a little one shot, it ended up being a 56 odd page book, Ryan. Yeah. So.
And just do some slash fiction. That's all I do. I write it a lot. Yeah.
Just bust it out. I mean, just read my Twitter feed. It's sad enough scroll. And one thing I also want to make sure that I do mention is like, I don't know how many hats we have to put on so we can take those hats off to Black Mask. But Matt Pizzolo was fantastic in letting us do this book. I think, you know, the whole idea of putting this book together was there is no market or publisher that will back this sort of thing, so let's just do it. And Pizzolo, post sort of Beautiful Canvas, was just like, all right, what does a future horizon look like? And he was phenomenal at supporting a stupid-sized book, formatted book. You know, we wanted a spine on there, and his email was, look, spines are more expensive, but if you want a spine, you can get a spine. Yeah. And I mean, that level of support is insane. He's not coming in and saying, oh, can you chat to D about maybe doing these pages differently? None of that. He lets a creative team assemble, the one that he trusts and believes in, and then backs us and supports us and gets the book out there. He let us have, like, he pushed us to get really good paper stock on there. He doesn't try to cut corners. He doesn't run it purely as a business. He's very much looking at it with an artistic eye, which is so amazing. And I love working with him, and I love working with Black Mask for that reason.
Yeah, Black Mask, yeah, definitely, they're just getting stronger every year with their output. They're definitely one to watch. And the thing about Eternal as well is, for me, it's almost an evergreen kind of book, because it is a one-shot. It's a longer story, but because of the nature of the book, there's nothing that dates it. The artwork and the writing will always be strong, there won't be anything that happens politically that year that will take away from it. So it's a book that has an infinite lifespan, you could say, on the shelves.
That's the hope. Yeah, because it's cheaper. If you like, we made it so that, you know, your most intense comic reader should have lots to appreciate in this book. They should be able to look at those panels and how the borders work. They should be able to look at these colors from scene to scene and take in, you know, absolute sort of emotional mastery. And they should be able to, you know, enjoy it as a comic. Someone who's new to comics should be able to flick through it fairly quickly, so it's not a dense read, but there's a lot going on that they should walk away. We sort of tried to make something that would be for every type of reader, and could sit on a shelf for decades, one can only hope, and just sort of continue to sell, because as new books come out from any of us, I would hope that people would be able to say, well, you know, here's Dee's new book, and why don't you throw in, you know, Dee's little one-shot that he colored here on the side, because it's cheap and you can put it on your pile and it will just continue to sort of turn over. That's the hope for a project like this. And I got to say, as it came together, I very quickly realized this isn't a book that we made that we turned over and we're on to the next thing. This thing came together nigh on perfectly on every level. We will all continue to push it, you know, as long and as far and as wide as we can, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't had experience now out at a con with it, but I know yourself, Ryan, and Eric both have said that it flew off the table. I had a huge stack of them for Dunfermline Comic Con, which sadly got cancelled a couple of weeks ago. I've a big stack of them now to bring down to a Cork Expo next week at the end of the month that Will Sliney is organizing, so I'm hoping it'll it'll shift for me as well at that. But I know, like, in my local comic bookstore, it's Big Bang. Oh, they're pushing the fuck out of it. They love it.
Yeah. You've got a good comic shop there, Dee. That's a good business there, isn't
when
it?
When I say local, it's like 50 miles away, but that's my comic shop.
Right,
yeah. They've been so wonderfully supportive of this book. They're the best.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think they put it in, they got like 3 weeks in a row worth of orders, because they would get an order and sell out, and then they would get it in the next pallet, and then that would sell out, and then they got it in a third round. So yeah, they've done a really good job. I know JP and the boys have really pushed it.
JP is pushing it on everybody.
I've got to tell you, Orbital sold out. My local one is Orbital in London, and they've sold out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely flying off shelves in London, dude. Yeah.
Yeah,
because I'd done up a couple of mini prints, little A5 prints for bringing to a con with me.
All right.
And I think I did up about 50 of them. And the Big Bang and Forbidden Planet London took them all off me.
Really? Nice. Okay.
So there was an extra incentive for buyers there with Big Bang and Forbidden Planet London.
Yeah, because they do those lovely sort of packages, don't they, where you get like a special
book plating,
thing. So I ended up not having any of those book plates to sell myself.
I couldn't flipping find it in Forbidden Planet. I'll have to go back and look, because I've only got the Comixology version at the moment. But yeah, I'll head back in there and have a look. Nice. Oh, cool. Yeah.
But I think they probably won't have the little mini print in it, though, because I think they flew off the shelves.
Right, okay. Yeah, good. Good news.
It was an interesting beast for retailers to order, because it was in the trade section, and I think they lent more towards trade numbers than they did like a single issue, which was, you know, a good and a bad thing in a way. But that means that they can easily reorder it, and it doesn't matter if you get this a month after release, whereas I know with issues, people sort of have that thing of, we've moved on.
I'll wait for trade.
I'll get that. But it's a thing that I know a few retailers have reached out to me and said, we sold out, and thanks for making a good book, and we're just re-upping our stock, and we're sort of just on our end at a Black Mask, we're just sort of watching them sort of slowly just get through the stock, which is perfect. It's exactly what we sort of want the book to be.
Are you looking for a French translation, or I can see it going down well in, you know, Belgium and France and these sort of countries. Is there a plan for that at all, or
not a hard plan? But I would love it to hit the Euro market. I think it would be a perfect sell there. We just sort of have to work out exactly
who
to talk to and make that happen. But I don't know. I think if we just roll out another one a year, as Dee said, it'll just sort of push the back catalogue. And I mean, it just makes sense, really.
A nice little album for the French comic shops and stuff would be beautiful, dude. Yeah, really nice.
Yeah.
Mash them along. So, I don't know. And that's the thing. Like, and we all did after the book came out, like the three of us were just like, well, you know, we have to work on something again at some stage. And that's kind of cool when you have that creative team firing on all cylinders, and it becomes a real. I remember like Owen Gianni said it to me after making Negative Space. He was like, it's like you've been at war together. It's like Band of Brothers. Like you feel like there's a connection. Yeah. Like I desperately want to work with Sammy and Triona Farrell again. Like there's that alchemy that comes together from specific teams coming together. So
it's not just making it rhyme for me. It's selling it at conventions. We're having this with our comic at the moment. You're selling it at conventions, then you're sending it out for reviewers, and all four of us are waiting for the reviews to come back. And, talking about them. And you're right. It's like a little – it's not a siege mentality. I'm not going to say it's that, but it is, if they don't like it, they don't understand it. You know, there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And I've been, like, with watching reviews come in, we were gifted with reviews. They were amazing. But I love that the reviews really wanted to talk about Eric's work and exceptionally wanted to talk about Dee's work in there.
Real.
And it speaks volumes that that reviewers are getting smarter and know how to talk about colors, but then have these amazing colorists to talk about. Yeah. I think that's one of the key things to this book. And I loved seeing that happen on Beautiful Canvas as well, where these reviewers would spend a big chunk of time just talking about, you know, the amazing colors and on the page and what they're seeing and what it's doing and why they like it and how it's effective. It's important because I mean, people will talk constantly, you know, bad colors will ruin a comic or bad letters will ruin a comic. So, you know, be careful about, you know, the whole creative team. Don't just front.
Yeah,
as a writer,
don't just
front
quote, artist, now.
Skimp money. You have to get a whole like collectives together. Yeah. And with Eternal, it just sort of fell together.
Well, my only complaint is that it got released in January.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was the same as the Dregs. That it opens up the year. Reviewers love it, people love it, but by December
do people remember it? Yeah,
will it be remembered for the best of lists? I
hope so. Yeah,
not just for myself, but I like a couple of people have DM'd me, a couple of creatives who I would respect their opinion fully have told me that it's Eisner quality.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, I'm not going to say who said it, but, a couple of people have said, that's an Eisner book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And name your award. That's what I say. It could win anything. And, don't worry.
We start keeping lists, don't we, Duke? Yeah, we get to the end of the year and we think, I can't fucking remember what happened in January. So I've actually started keeping a notebook of stuff. So,
it's a smart way to do it. And I'll probably email like a bunch of the press that I know, to be honest, in like early November and go, look, don't forget Eric and D and don't forget this book sort of thing if you're putting together your list.
You almost have to, it's like the Oscars, isn't it? They're for your consideration. Yeah. You almost have to do the second push again, don't you?
And it feels like no creator wants to do that because it feels crazy. But it's also like, we did. We came out right at the start. And by November, people could be forgiven for sort of going, wait, was that this year? Was it late last year? What are we looking at? And
definitely.
It's a book where I think Eric and Dee did phenomenal jobs, and I want to see them mentioned at the end of the year. So I'll be pushing them onto sort of who I know as a don't forget sort of option. Although, Dee, it's funny you say that because I feel the same way with miniseries. If you launch in November, you're screwed because you'll only get two issues in, so people can't quite put you on the list, and then you'll finish in the next year. Yeah. And people are like, well, we only wrapped it up, and so you just miss both years.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about as a sort of a means of publicity is the mailer. Now, the mailer's come into its own almost in the last year, and I sign up to yours, and a very professional and good read it is. Are you finding that's a good tool at the moment, or is it a growing tool, or what do you think?
I love having the newsletter, and I love putting it together, and it certainly it gets a lot of positive feedback from the people who read it. I get a lot of responses to it, and people seem to be enjoying it. But I did at the end of last year run, or maybe it was early this year, I ran a little like questionnaire. And one of the questions on it was, have you pre-ordered Eternal at your local LCS? I just want to see, the efficacy of the newsletter. And it was like 3/4 said no. They were like, oh, don't. I haven't got around to it, or I'll buy it on Comixology, or I'll wander in and get a copy. I was like, oh, that's interesting to see. Whereas like the turnover between my newsletter and Kickstarters is huge.
Right.
It was like a vast majority of my newsletter readers have backed at least one of my Kickstarters. So I wonder if my newsletters are very digital, readership and sort of environment of people, and they're not as much sort of brick and mortar people. But it was interesting to sort of note that. It's by no means like I don't expect someone who reads my free newsletter to pre-order an $8 book, and that's sort of fine. It was more just me sort of seeing like, you want to see, if you're putting effort into something, you want to see if that effort's yielding results. And it's got some people to pre-order the book, and a few people did email specifically back and say, oh yeah, I pre-ordered, or I pre-ordered a few because I want to give some away as a present, which, which I think it's perfect for. I don't know. I like the newsletter as like a bit of a brain dump for me. It gives me a place to put some of the stupid shit I'm thinking about. And as I just sort of look at social media, returns at once did. I'm just sort of going, I could better place my brain.
It's weird because I mean, you very kindly have signed up to mine as well, Ryan, which is very kind of you. But
I love it.
Thank you, man. But I find the level of engagement with a mailer is higher. So I'll put something on a blog and I'll get 1,000 reads, and I'll get virtually nothing back. But if I put it in a mailer, I get a quarter of those reads. I seem to get a lot of people writing in or replying to it, or it's quite nice like that. I think it's almost more personal, maybe.
Yeah, it's a little more connected. I love it. I love giving a newsletter a response as well, and just sort of dropping a line and being like, oh, you mentioned this one thing, this sounds good. Or, oh, you're reading this book, I like that book too, sort of thing. It's, I don't know if it's just because it's in your inbox and feels a little more
Yeah, reading it on your pings perhaps. And you read it. It's one step away from just being a text almost, isn't it? You know, I suppose.
That's the thing, whereas I think social media is, it's not about the pause and engagement. It is about the scroll. It is about what's next. Pause. Yeah. Oh, interesting. What's next? Yeah. It's not built for that actual interconnectivity that we really think it is or should be. It's not.
Yeah, I agree.
It's totally something else and becoming something else more and more. And people are sort of starting to just see through it and get. I mean, I've got young kids, and I consider that in the future when they grow up. Like, for years I've been sort of going, well, you know, they'll probably be on Instagram and they'll be on Facebook cyberbullying and all these different things. And what do they have access to that's not good that's out there? I mean, the amount of Facebook groups that you can search on and find, you know, porn images, flat earth stupidity, all sorts of racist stuff. It's right there and it's not filtered. But then I sort of look at the younger generation and go, oh, man, they probably don't even want to get on this stuff. There's going to be a bunch of old dudes like me on there. They're like, yeah, cool. I'll get on Facebook with Dad and he'll like all my stuff. No, thank you. They'll probably be like lo-fi. They'll start doing pen pals or something stupid. Like, who knows?
Mixtapes came back for a while, didn't it? Didn't they? Maybe people will start writing letters to people in France again at school.
We're going to be living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland soon enough. So you know, when electricity goes,
won't be great, is what I'm hearing. The Wi-Fi would be like $2. All right. Okay. Yeah. You don't want to juice all that up with your Instagram feed.
Well, I know that we had a power cut last week that lasted about 40 minutes, and there was no Wi-Fi. And the two younger kids, the 11-year-old and the 17-year-old, flipped out. They didn't know what to do.
I like that, but they'll be like, wait, no, it's okay. I've got Netflix on my iPad. No, wait. Well, oh, goddamn.
There was enough power on the MacBook to put a DVD on, so it was like, okay, we're okay. We can get through this with some entertainment.
Yeah, I had a power cut.
I used to love it because I'd put a candle on I'd get a fighting fantasy book out and I'd start rolling some dice.
Rolling dice. I used to love that as a
kid. I
was around Vince's house and there was a power cut. Do you remember Vince? And we put a play on. It was quite nice. Wasn't
don't
it, for everyone?
Lie. It was the woman in black.
Yes.
But that's the thing. We don't know what's coming down the pike. We think of Twitter as ubiquitous because it's been around like maybe 10 years for most of us. Yeah. It's actually like that's. I mean, it's getting long in the tooth, to be honest. Most of these things start to wane out. I mean, I would have said that Microsoft Office was eternal, and yet I haven't touched it in years because I use Google Drive. These things flip and change and at an alarming speed, and so it's always something to sort of consider. I mean, even as we make comics, we have to consider, oh, how will this look on Comixology? And I haven't read Eternal.
I was thinking about that today. We design our pages now so that when you flick between, there's a thing in my mailer about it this week where I read a comic I hadn't read for a long time. And I read it on Guided View, and it's a completely different experience reading it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Eternal works extremely well in the Guided View. Example of one that doesn't necessarily work for me, I mean, it's critically acclaimed, but the DC's Mr. Miracle series. The Guided View is brilliant for that, but because it's all 9 panels, isn't it, I think?
It's very small panels, aren't they, as well? Yeah. So
that's a bit intense, like, for every page. I mean, obviously intentionally, but I think for that, it works better Guided View. Because
that'll hurt your wrist, won't it, more than... Well, yours is quite strong, isn't it? But it'll hurt you.
I like the digital makes every page a page turn. That, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, definitely.
But the guided view, I like pages as a whole piece. Yeah. There's too many times. And I know with guided view, you swipe and it becomes a whole page and then you do the panels. So you get it. But I don't know. I still like taking it all in as one, but I do love that you get all those extra page turns. I think
it was the only way I could buy your flaming book because I couldn't find it in a shop. You pair of bastards.
These stores, man. These stores have to trust in the brand of Zavadsky and Lindsay Gunnup. Like, what are they doing? They'll get on board the next one. We'll be fine. Yeah. Although, I mean, we came in at like number 51 on the trade charts.
Oh, amazing. Great,
man, isn't it?
Which is nuts. Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
So I was really happy with that.
Well, what did you do, Dee? Did you buy a castle or are you living in a castle now? Or...
I paid some mortgage. You know, I wish I'd started much earlier and it was a hobby. But, yeah, you know, I've got three kids and a mortgage and, you know, it's a job and I have to treat it like a job.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, it's like it's getting up early, working the whole day, taking a bit of time off to do stuff with the kids and cook dinner and collect from schools and stuff. But you know, comics is a job.
Yeah.
And you know, getting a project like this, which can make the job enjoyable, is few and far between, honestly.
Yeah. And it's
that's good to hear. I'm glad that it was something that you enjoyed. And I mean, the fact that you were like, oh, can you get a bunch of like comps shipped because I want to sell them, like that warmed my heart. I won't lie. That
means absolutely. No, that like that there's, you know, I've got long boxes here of comps that I have no idea what I'm going to do with them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even consider bringing them to a convention sale or something. But yeah, absolutely. Like I have. This is definitely, you know, this and Redneck are my two kind of big things that I want to be pushing at a convention.
It'd be nice to sort of have them there and open them and it shows you very, very quickly. Like you're almost the first thing that'll be seen, even before specific art. It's just this color that comes through. And I know, it's how I sell a lot of my books at the table. I quickly flip it open because I'm like, check out what's happening in here. And even just a flip shows, like with Eternal, these great hues come to life and it's a real hook for readers beyond whatever that cover does to people, because people just are drawn to it. And it becomes quite... Somebody walked up to my table and was just walked up and was... They were looking at it the whole way. They walked up and they like pulled the money out. I was like, you want a copy? Yeah. I tell you about it, I guess, maybe. And they're like, no,
yeah, you get the sound. I love those moments. I absolutely love those moments.
Awesome. Yeah. It's like, man, you are locked in. You got a radar. I was like, good taste.
But it totally sort of dumbfounds you, doesn't it? Because you're so used to having to do the pitch to do the sale, and then you're like, okay.
Yeah. Okay, there's a lot less guilt when I feel that I'm over-egging it and just bullying someone into buying it. If they just walk up and buy it, I feel a lot better. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Yeah.
They probably want it and we'll read it down the track.
And do you ever have the ones that, like, they come over and they buy something, and when they buy something, like, you know, straight off, I want to engage with them and just have a chat about the day, you know, because I like that interaction. Yeah. But some people just want to come up, buy it, and then go. And that's
I feel like they bought it by mistake. I feel a bit bad.
Yeah. Like, man, you're here for the con. You can have some of my time as well. Yeah. Like, you could just buy off a shelf, like, quietly. I feel that way.
Do you think I'm someone else? I tend to say.
Yeah. I've got a con coming up and I'm gonna try and what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna take Eternal and make a big like display out of half the table for it. And then I'm gonna take the beautiful canvas trade. And then maybe one other one shot, the Stainless Sea Scarlet, and that's it. Because normally I table with a lot of stuff. Yeah. I'll have Negative Space Trade, Chum Trade, a few of the other one shots. And I'm actually going to pair it back and see if it makes a difference. So instead of just having like two piles of Eternal, have like half a table of Eternal, and see what sort of change in sort of sale, whether it'll hyper focus sales on one thing and really make it large instead of sprinkling sales over everything. It's that sort of stuff that interests me as to how your table works, how cons work, how it all sort of clicks together. I certainly don't have it all figured out, so I'm just sort of
being
cautious.
So for our lovely listeners then who want to check you out in an upcoming show, what shows, Ryan and Dee, have you got coming up over the next few months?
There's this Cork Expo that The Big Bang and Will Sliney have organized, which I think is coming up on the 14th of April.
Okay.
And then I'm going to be at Nice in September with Donnie.
Oh, I'm there. Yeah, I'm at that, dude.
It's great. It'll be great to finally meet Donnie after having worked with him for so long. So that's, I'm not tabling at Thought Bubble this year, but I'll probably make my way over.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'll be at Thought Bubble as well. Yeah. So, yeah, look forward to meeting you, dude. That'd be good. Are we going to get
I desperately want to do Thought Bubble.
That's right up your street, I think, Ryan, isn't it? You know.
Oh, it's great fun. I love Thought Bubble. It's a real creative comic con. Like, I have no interest in going to a comic con that's selling vinyl pop toys or, you know, Lego figures or any of that stuff. That really just doesn't.
You just made friends with all of our audience, by the way.
Those shows will be like, we just got 40,000 people through the door, and it's like, yeah, but they're all here to see
E.T.'s finger. E.T.'s finger. That's why I saw that one.
I can't convert E.T.'s finger to sales on my weird deer-headed book. Like, it's not the same thing. So I'm like, I'm glad your show's a success, but to be honest, like, I'll do these, like, I'll do the big pop culture shows, and they're lovely and they treat us well in Australia. And you know, you do decent sales because, you know, a bigger crowd yields even a smaller percentage is still more people, right? That's just sort of maths. But if I go to these smaller things, I will nearly make as much money because it's just people there for comics. We had one recently here in the capital that I live in, Canberra, ACAF, and it was a much smaller show. There were no, like, you know, there was one TV star, and it was because it's an Australian show, and an Australian show that's sort of very comic influenced and has been translated into a comic. And so, you know, people were there to look at comics, to talk to comic creators, and to buy comics, and my sales were great. I do a lot of these sort of smaller, so instead of going to like Melbourne and Sydney, if I go to smaller towns like Wollongong or Goulburn, my sales will be nearly just as good for like one day instead of two. They might be. You'll never know.
I saw a Facebook post there the other day of a convention. I can't remember what it was, where it was in England, but one of their main guests was a truck.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a truck that has like been in a movie or, you know, it wasn't Optimus Prime. It was just a truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That had some fancy painting on it, but it wasn't even comic painting or anything. And it was like, you know.
It's like the Craggy Island Fair, which has a ladder. Do you remember? Yeah. They just have a ladder. I always think of that whenever I see, like, there's an owl at this convention.
Or the latest one that we've seen about, it's a Jurassic Park recreation, but you can sit on a toilet and there's a bad plastic T-Rex head next to it.
Oh, God. And did I see Ken Barlow is a guest at some con as well?
Jesus Christ.
I think it's and all these things will have higher billing than any of the comic artists there.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous. And that's where, like, I'd much rather go to a smaller show that's one day. It's usually like 10 till 6 or whatever.
Yeah.
And the people there are genuinely just there for fiction and for stories and to chat. And it's so good and it's so connected. And sales will boom at those things. Yeah. And I love those things instead. So I'm sort of working out what it looks like moving forward, especially with my stuff. You know, I don't have like Spider-Man on the table. I need people who genuinely look at a Viking story and go, oh, I want to know what's going on in there. I want to read widely.
And I think you get that, a genuine like thought bubble or, you know, a lot of the ones we go to, you genuinely do get that feeling, I think. You know, I really like that, you know.
That's like, because I've gone to Emerald City twice and I kind of love that show. Right. And everybody sort of gets out for that one and that's been great. But I really want to do Thought Bubble. I don't know, I gotta trick my wife into making it like a family holiday or something.
Yeah, that's the try. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's in what we call the Grim North here in London, Ryan.
Is it quiet up there? Is it more like sedate?
Nah, it's busy. It's a busy con. Yeah, it really is. They've changed the venue. Did you go last year, Dee? Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I really like that new venue. I was
kind of worried about it because it felt like, you know, you had to leave and you had to walk around and go into another tent and walk around. I thought that that would cause problems. I guess if it was raining, that might be an issue.
Yeah.
But it kind of added to the kind of the comic city vibe of it.
Yeah, I think it being in the centre as well of, you know, the centre of the town almost.
As opposed to out over. They got a lot more kind of walkthroughs.
Yeah, I bet they did. Yeah.
It was really nice. I was worried about it, but it actually turned out to be a really good...
Yeah, it refreshed it for me. I was getting a bit bored of it, I think, up to that point. And then I went last year and thought, oh, no, I really like that. It's a really good vibe to it. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's worth doing. Yeah, that's probably... I reckon that would be the one I'd recommend to you, Ryan, over here, I think, genuinely. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to put together like a 2-year business plan and
make
it happen. Well, that's the only one. I, just... I could never consider traveling to America for you know, Australia for a con, because there's just no way for me to monetize I do enough to do something that big. You know, like, you know, Thought Bubble is
so expensive.
Yeah, Thought Bubble isn't expensive for me. Yeah. You know, and it's an overhead bag full of books. That's all I need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, pair of pants and a t-shirt. And I'll pick up another t-shirt if I need one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully you take a pair of trousers with you.
No, one pair of pants, one pair of trousers do me just fine.
We sold quite a lot of t-shirts last year at Thought Bubble on the grounds that people had run out of t-shirts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good business model, that. I like it.
Yeah.
What shows have you got over there, Ryan, coming up?
So I'm heading up, it's just this coming, like, next weekend, up to Goulburn. There's like a Readers Writers Festival on, so I'll be going to that. It's a nice little small town, an hour north of where I live. In May, I have in Wollongong, they have a convention called the Comic Gong, and it's a one-day thing, and it's like my favorite day of the year almost. There's a lot of really like good mates that head into that show. It's a small town. They run the show really well. There's always like really, really cool niche stuff to buy there. Stuff you don't see at some of the bigger shows. And it's generally a sales bonanza for me. And beyond that, I'm just trying to actually iron out. I'm chatting to some of the other bigger conventions as to what to do. Like, I'll probably be in Melbourne and Sydney at some stages throughout this year. Some of the conventions are falling on either my birthday or my son's birthday, and we're just trying to work out as a family what we're doing.
Yeah.
Whether we all trek out for it and make it a weekend away, or whether, you know, if it's just my birthday, who cares? I'm getting old. We don't need to celebrate that fact. just move on with our lives. And so, sort of looking at what to do with those. And then, you know, because I've got like Eternal and Beautiful Canvas to sell, so I'm sort of keen to get out into a few different cities and push some stuff, and then it'll be a bit of a break until, you know, the next things are announced. Yeah.
Well, we are on board with anything that you guys do.
Definitely,
So keep it coming. For our lovely listeners who love to follow people on Twitter and stuff, where can people find you on social media, etc.? Who wants to go first?
Indeed, I'll let
I don't really have much of a social media presence. I have Dzoid on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think I have a Blogspot thing that I rarely update, which is desaturate.blogspot. But I don't understand Instagram or any of the other ones. So
I'm trying to
understand Instagram. But
is that the same as Tinder?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's how I've been treating it. If by that you mean I have it on my phone, I've never opened it. I don't have Tinder on my phone. That's a horrible thing to say. But I just rarely open the app. Damn it, I've said too much. Where's the edit button on this thing?
Yeah. It's too early. My wife. Too early in the morning.
On
most platforms, you can find me as like at Ryan K. Lindsay. So on Facebook, there's a / Ryan K. Lindsay sort of writer page. Instagram, I open like every 3 to 4 weeks and just dump a bunch of weird photos in, and then don't open it again for a while.
Oh, that'd Twitter, be interesting to look at.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, it's a real scattershot of my brain.
Yeah.
But Twitter, you can find me most of the time at Ryan K. Lindsay, and generally just sort of talking idiocy and being a fool. But most importantly, if anyone is interested in the actual work that I'm doing and wanting to sink into it, they should probably have a subscribe to my newsletter, which you can get to at the web address tinyletter.com/RyanKLindsay.
I read that every week. Very good.
Me too. Yeah. It's kind of the highlight of my Monday morning.
Aww.
Oh, nice. I like that I've somehow timed it to sort of start people's week.
Yeah.
Like, it's good. I grab coffee, I sit down, and I sort of get ready for things. Wow, yeah.
It's almost it's a little bit of a burden every week, because I write a little intro and then I write an essay in mine, and it does get to sort of Thursday and I think, oh, what am I going to write this week? You know what I mean? It's a bit like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't even done anything this week. Oh my God.
Yeah, no.
Time to make something up. Wow, yeah. I was writing the other night. No, you weren't, Ryan. Oh, bullshit. You're a liar.
I went to post on Instagram and I accidentally opened up Tinder, but that's another story.
Oh, well, that was an awesome date night.
Down.
Yeah. I remember I said that once. I was joking with my wife about someone did something. And I was like, oh, they'll have to swipe right. She just looks at me and she's like, how do you know what swipe right is? And like, I was like, I don't know. Isn't that just a cultural knowledge thing?
Yeah.
I thankfully skipped the whole Tinder age. I didn't have to engage with any of that. I would have been horrible at that. That's I went through uni with no Facebook. It was great. I lived in puke times.
You lived your life, which more people need to do these days.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So, are any of you guys over 40?
Only just.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually.
You know what it was like in 1991, trying to.
Yeah, I just used to spend a lot of time actually physically begging. Well, now you can do it online. It's sort of.
So much more convenient now.
Yeah, and less embarrassing, Ryan. To be fair. Yeah.
You'll find a way to be
viral. Back in 1991, it didn't go viral.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. 1991. If you went viral, that was a completely different thing.
Yeah, Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of every interview, it always goes wrong, doesn't it, Tony?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, but for everyone out there, definitely, if you haven't checked out Eternal yet, definitely pick it up. Comic book shops out there, be sure to order it because it's an evergreen title. We loved it, and thank you very much, Ryan and Dee, for joining us this week.
Yeah,
you are welcome back anytime.
Yeah, okay, Dave.
It was awesome to get to chat to you, Dee. It was nice. We don't Skype, so that was
absolutely
that was
yes.
I'm terrible for not Skyping people.
Yeah, we brought people together. They haven't spoken properly to each other.
No.
Considering we met on Tinder, so.
I must look for artists on Tinder. that is, to be fair, how me and Nick Prolix met. So that is
Oh,
and if all our listeners can just like pour a 40 out for Eric as he slowly dies.
Yes. Get well soon.
Man flu.
Yeah.
There was the most depressing tweet ever I saw earlier. He says, "I feel so bad. I've got a deadline, and all I can see from my bed is a clock ticking away."
Oh. It was a sad image.
Yeah.
Visual. His tweets are visual. He's amazing.
Yeah. And we will put Eric's Twitter, etc., of course, in the show notes. So check them out. And thank you again, guys.
No worries.
Thanks a lot for your time, guys. We really appreciate the support, and thanks for everybody who's listening.
Thank you.
Look at that. Get How in. That? How good is that? See?
Yeah. I like those ones. We just basically focused in on pretty much one issue.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. It sort of broke it down, didn't it? It was interesting for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly being the huge fans of the book that we are, it's just fascinating finding out. I mean, certainly from Dee's perspective, just some of the colouring, you know, because it's such an important part of that book. And
I've downloaded the dregs this week as well to look at. It's really interesting.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we hope you enjoyed that, folks. I know a lot of our listeners have been looking forward to that interview. So
it
was one of the. I got to give a shout out to both the guests actually, and everyone involved with it, because I had a bit of a brain meltdown.
because about the timing.
Because of the timing of it, three different time zones and everything, and I wanted to get us all on at the same time. Of course, I was trying to be completely specific with the timing, get everything right, make sure everyone's happy, the right day. We did that interview on a Saturday night, which for Ryan is a Sunday morning. That's the way things have to sort of, you know.
Well, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. So I thought I had it completely locked down and everything great. And then probably about an hour before we recorded, I realised that I had the times wrong. I was off by a couple of hours. So thank you to everyone for being available and reorganising.
Yeah, I got another one of your messages. It was, fuck, I got the wrong time. It was like the time you messaged me saying, fuck, it didn't record.
Yeah, but we managed to sort it, and see, you lovely people would never know, so that was just a little behind the scenes, but I just wanted to give a big shout out to all three of the creators of Eternal for just being brilliant, so there you go.
They're split up now, haven't they? I used to like them as a band.
Yeah, I know. what, they like Busted?
Who's in Eternal? There was some, I can't remember their names now.
Fucking hell.
Well, that's an old cat.
Why didn't I do that joke? I could have done that joke. It would have been brilliant.
Yeah.
Or would have been shit, to be fair.
Yeah, probably were falling on deaf ears.
Would they have got that reference?
I don't know.
I don't know how big a turnover it was. Yeah. I'm struggling to think of one of their songs. That's no diss on Eternal.
No, I know what you mean.
Oi, Louise Redknapp was in Eternal.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Louise.
Look, only Kelly, for the first Ernie album. Only for the first album, Tony. And then.
Oh, yeah, then she left, yeah.
Yeah, then she left.
Go in's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, folks, are you amazed by our knowledge on Eternal? Because you're probably the same amount of amazed that we were when we saw Marvel were having a sale on Comixology.
It's like, yeah.
You are a wanker.
Yeah, because you guys messaged me about this, and I thought, I'll check this out in a bit, and then I was like, oh, I've missed it.
Yeah, so, I mean,
it was for a few hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, I will say this to anyone who has a Comixology account: please keep your eyes open for sales, because you know I've got some fantastic books on there through sales, not just Marvel. But, you know, there's been DC sales, and they do with the bigger publishers, where you can't necessarily get them weekly because they're too expensive for a digital book. Let's be honest, they are a lot of the time, aren't they?
That's too much.
But you do it 6 months down the line, and they have this crazy sale. And what Marvel did on Comixology recently, I think
it's
in America,
the most crazy sale I think they've ever had, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean it was a 99-cent sale, really.
So 69p to us, wasn't it?
Yeah, 69p. Awesome. And there were so many good collections on there. I mean, when we say 99 cent, this isn't individual issues. This is collections. This is trades.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it, and the biggest issue I had with it was picking what I was going to get. It's ridiculous.
I got for under a tenner so many books.
Nice.
You know.
Yeah. Which ones? And Dan, you just missed out, because there was one I know, the volume one of Black Bolt. Tony was telling me to get that, and so I thought, oh, I'll pop back.
I should have fucking jumped on this.
Yeah, I thought, oh, I'll pop back on and get it, but it's gone back up to like £6 and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not being funny about that, Black Bolt. That is as good as the Vision series for me.
Really?
I'll put it right up there with it. Yeah, yeah. If we can find a trade when we're next to a con, I'll get you boys it, because it is really good. He's basically stuck in an alien prison.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else did you get, Vince?
I mean, what I did, I didn't go crazy, even though it was a crazy sale, I didn't go completely mental. But what I took was a chance to get some classic Marvel horror books. Like, you know, the big collections that have been sitting on my Amazon wish list for quite some time. And when you see them on eBay, they're still not any cheaper. Yes, I got Werewolf by Night, the complete collection, volume 1 and volume 2.
That was great, wasn't it? How many comics are in there? I got that as well. Yeah. Yeah, it's got the Ploog stuff in it. It's just gorgeous.
And that's the one I've started reading at the moment. I'm loving it.
Right.
I got Legion of Monsters a few years ago, that one.
I've got that. I've got that in hardback, actually, so I didn't get that one. Yeah. But I know we both got Tomb of Dracula,
volume
that's
one.
My third dip on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Volume one of Tomb of Dracula, which was, this is 69p, remember, for a digital book.
Yeah,
and it's 512 pages. Is that right?
Yeah. It's 1-15 of Tomb of Dracula and 1-4 of Dracula Lives, which was the black and white. I think like the black and white magazine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the first two volumes of Namor, which is Burns Namor series. I think mostly because I own them, like, obviously, because I'm a freak. But I thought I'm going to get these because I'd read the Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
For Gareth's Alpha Pod Flight podcast.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, the successor for me for that one is Namor, so I went on to that, and I've been reading that this week.
Yeah, and I've got the other two that I got. I know you got a volume one of this. I got volumes 1 and 2 of The Nam.
Yes, I only got the first volume of that. It's only 69p. Why are you hesitating? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like mad, isn't it? You know?
And that seriously, I mean, when I bought one issue of a normal comic with that lot, I got issue 1 of Vampironica. You know that the Archie one, which is actually really, really good. But that was the most expensive thing. My shopping cart.
Yeah.
All of that lot, I think, was about £6.
Yeah, yeah. Mine was only like £9. Yeah. I got X-Men: The Hidden Years, volumes 1 and 2 by Byrne again. Yeah. I got two big trades of West Coast Avengers. I got Marvel Masterwork of Warlock, and now that's the second volume, but it's got the Jim Starlin stuff, and it's got the Avengers 2-in-1 Thanos crossover.
Yeah.
The famous one, which is just fucking brilliant. I actually, I got Starling to sign the Avengers one of that because it's some of my favourite comics when I met him.
I think if you were over my shoulder when I was looking at like loads of them, and I had more knowledge of what happened in certain arcs, I would have bought more. Because a lot of them I'm thinking, right, that's volume four of that. I'm not sure what happens there.
Yeah, because when it was just volume two, you think, oh, should I get that? Even though back then it was like volume two was like a lot of self-contained stories, a lot of the stuff, you know.
Okay.
I got the Nick Fury volume two, but it's Storenko in it. You know, it's like the Storenko Nick Fury stuff. It's like amazing. I got Avengers collection from the 300s because I love Steve Epting. I think he's great.
Yeah.
I got Captain America Secret Empire because I think I missed an issue in the middle of that, so I haven't read the run yet, and I thought if I have it on my iPad, I'm going to read it. I got Master Kung Fu Volume 1. Which is 15 to 28 and giant size 1 to 4 and a few issues for 69p.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who liked The Vision, they had the entire collection of The Vision on and that's one that I've bought in Marvel sales, like the separate volumes, if you know what I mean. I think sales I picked them up for like £2-3 each. But you could have got, you know, I mean, we're talking in the past now, you know, obviously none of you I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that took advantage of it. I know a lot.
Oh yeah, I heard Stuart McCune's one who told me about it.
Yeah. And I know, I think Andy Turner took advantage of a lot of them as well. So there's a lot of our listeners who took advantage of this sale, but I think for those who missed out on it, just keep your eyes out. And this isn't just for Marvel fans as well. If you go on Comixology every week, there is some sort of sale from some sort of publisher, some sort of title. There's just if you go on there now, there's still quite a few things now.
Yeah, let me just say, watch this space for something I might be involved in. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Saucy nice. Minx. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun, but now we've got so many comics to read. I mean, the good thing, I think I wanted to get some of the older, more classic comics because there's less, I think, less pressure on, you know, I can pick up and read a bit here and there. Do you know what I mean? There's no sort of like, I need to be on top of this. And like Werewolf by Night, I just really wanted to check. I've never properly read them before. And one thing that, I mean, old comics, when they're put on digital, some of the colour looks awful. It's natural because you know, the colours are so flat. And Werewolf by Night has some beautiful colours when it's night scenes and it's blues. But when you have the daytime and it's just these flat greens up against purples and yellows, it's fairly hideous.
Yeah.
But on the old comic paper, it would have worked fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it sunk in a bit more, wouldn't it? Yeah. And I have to say, I read. A comic I've read like fucking 10 times. I read the first 5 issues of Master of Kung Fu.
Yeah.
And it really brought home to me how different a reading experience it is when you guided view as opposed to looking at a single page.
Right.
And those old issues, like you're saying, they crammed a lot of panels into a page, a lot of those issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so even like the smallest panels, which were meant to be small on the page, are blown up. Yeah. And it made. I've written a thing in the mailer this week. If you signed up for it and have a read of it, see what you think about the way it affects the reading experience. And it just became across as almost a different comic.
Yeah.
To me.
It's also a hell of a lot longer. I mean, certainly. Werewolf by Night at the beginning, a lot of sort of monologues. There's a lot of dialogue. Like you say, they so many panels on a page, and then when you look up to the top to see how far you're in. You're in the book. I just thought, bloody hell, I haven't even finished the first issue yet. And I've been
I've had that.
That's quite common, yeah.
I've been reading a comic that's like 30-odd pages, and I've fed a bit into it. How long fucking is this? And it's like, it's 15 pages of 30. Yeah. It's like, I would have blasted through this.
Yeah.
Interesting. Like you said, it's kind of weird when it blows up smaller panels. They're supposed to be quite small, and they're blown up like 3 or 4 times the size.
Yeah.
And the art's like, this looks a bit kind of off. But when you spin, like zoom the page out, it's like, fucking that panel's tiny.
Yeah. I mean,
definitely. I've been reading some Dreadstar this week, some Starling Dreadstar. Yeah. And Starling really plays about, even in the Bronze Age, plays about with the way he stacks panels and, you know, pulls out and, you know, he almost has like 5 panels just with one person's eye in it. And I think if you take care when you do the guided view, if the people at Comixology have an eye to it and are taking some care around it, it's really interesting because it just stacks the panels. It doesn't go from one panel to the next. It like almost
animates
cards. Mm. Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, and it's really interesting stuff. Yeah, really looked good.
It makes me wonder, is the future of kind of like making comics like that, where you have kind of flicking through stuff as opposed to I love the whole page stuff, but would that be something that may go towards? I don't know.
I think, you know, if you're confident enough and if the skills are there, you can have the best of both worlds. And I know we were just speaking to them just then, but Eternal is a great example because I read that guided view.
Yeah, me too.
And it had this brilliant cinematic pace to it. But then when you look at the whole pages, it doesn't take anything away from those whole pages, does it? Because every single page of that is sublime. Yeah. And I think that's what you're saying is true, Tony. Like, if the people at Comixology, you know, they look at the page and they figure out the best sort of rhythm of how to do the panels, I think you can have the best of both worlds. But I mean, people have to understand that in order to do guided view, that's a lot of work for someone to do. You know, if any one of us was looking at a 1970s comic and just thinking, right, how am I going to break this down into guided view? Oh, and I've got another 500 pages to do.
Yeah. It's a bit of a job.
Also, the thing about layouts as well, we've had over the last 10 years some books like Batwoman, all these sort of books, which have really played with layouts, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, and how you then translate. I think Batwoman, didn't it? Which was the issue of, it was the Unwritten by Mike Carey, wasn't it? Where you actually had to turn the book upside down as you read it.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
How does that translate? Christ.
Yeah. It was going through Vanguard on the guided view, and there's like a long panel I had with a conversation down it. And the first click, you'd look at the top half, the second one, the bottom half, and the third, it would show you the whole panel before going on to the next. I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's not bad. I kind of like that.
They must have some kind of house rules or guidelines on how they set these panels up.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone has ever said, no, you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
That's fucking with the pacing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think by that point, you're just like, I've done this as a comic and fuck it. It's, yeah. Well, that's my experience at least.
Yeah.
So there you go. Keep your eye out, folks, because you never know when you might pick up a gem. And I'm totally looking
forward definitely. To that. Yeah.
I was saying at the end, after we finish this recording, I'm going to watch the last episode of Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got kind of mixed feelings on this one, if I'm honest. I know we don't try not to talk TV shows and films too much. We do a little. But I feel like this one was missing something for me. There's certain elements. I always thought like the Jessica Jones TV series was kind of tried to be a bit noir-esque detective. And you certainly got that flavour at the first series. Like when she's in the garden with the Purple Man. She's very much out of her element. She's more kind of like late nights, drinking in bars, kind of dirty, dark. And then when she's in this bright garden, she's out of her element. But in this series, they just seem to put her in places which it doesn't feel like the character should be there. Like if you saw Daredevil running around in midday, it's like this, it's not this type of character. That's the way at least I felt.
I want it to be the Rockford Files, but a superhero series, you know, that sort of feel. Yeah. But I'll tell you what does come. I mean, I've got very mixed feelings about the new series, which I'll let people make their own decision round. I think everyone was good in it, but I do think they did well in making her a very good and convincing detective. I think they show that she's got the brains as well as the sort of super strength, and there's one of the few things I walked away from it thinking I really liked the way they did that. If that makes sense,
With all the characters, I don't really need. I'm more interested in what Jessica Jones does as opposed to where she's come from. I mean, the origin I don't find too interesting. I'd rather just have her on cases and doing stuff.
Yeah, funny enough, we mentioned that in the interview that you missed, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah, I hinted at that in that, and I agree completely, mate. I'm bored of origins. I really am, you know.
Yeah. I'm quite happy with a quick recap. You don't even need one with Jessica Jones, in my opinion.
Nah.
It's just like that's what it is, and you don't really... They allude to it a little bit in the first series, like he used to have a costume, blah, blah, blah. But don't really need any more than that. So, there we go.
No spoilers, but it may be the origin of another character as well.
Yeah.
I can get, being that I'm up to episode 10 or 11, whatever it is, I can pretty much guess what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Right. But, okay.
my wife was sort of saying, I hope that doesn't happen. And I said, it will happen.
Yeah. I mean, my thought was on it. I thought it was really well acted, really well directed.
Yeah, really well acted.
Everything was in place. For me, the story is just not enough.
I kept waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
But like you say, mate, everyone in it is so good now, and they're all people I want. Like we talked about this before we came on, they're all people I want to watch. They carry it off. She's so good in it, mate.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah. I did make a point, like someone was complaining that Jessica Jones isn't a bloody good role model for girls. It's like, well, Frank Castle ain't a good role model for boys. What's the point?
Yeah who's
you're not, should, you, yeah. you should be watching these fucking programs for good role models.
Yeah.
I think they make that fairly clear from the start. You're putting your own intentions into a show there, aren't you? It's fairly obvious from series one when he turns it over that she ain't. You know what I mean?
But definitely, we hope you'll enjoy it and make up your own minds.
I still say it's head and shoulders above the CW superhero shows. I've dropped out of all of them now.
They're slowly filling up my Skybox. I try and catch up on them every so often, you know, if I ever get any time.
People were saying about this series of The Flash, the last episode really made the series. Like, well, I don't want to watch fucking 20 episodes of a show for one of them to be good.
Yeah,
I just ain't got that time.
I
haven't watched Black Lightning yet. I must actually catch up on that one.
I've heard that one's quite good.
That
was an odd rule. The rest were kind of like quite big, kind of they brought them up quite a bit, and that one just seemed to appear on Netflix. It was like, what's this one?
How long before we run out of characters? I mean, there's a Cloak and Dagger series coming out now. How long has Cloak and Dagger's comic series run for? How long? I think there's been more episodes of Black Lightning at this point than there were in his series.
Yeah. You know?
We're beginning to scrape a little bit, aren't we now?
Fuck me. Yeah. The wealth of characters to choose from, and then they pick some of the kind of D, E, F listers, in my opinion. Yeah. There's loads of characters. I just kind of like, you pick this character and think, right, we're going to make a series out of this. They've got like so many great stories you can tell from them. And then like, I don't really know Cloak and Dagger, but I couldn't tell you one story which is like, wow, that's the Cloak and Dagger story.
Yeah, not for. Really, is it? You know what I mean? Yeah. They're in stuff like Civil War, and you know they appear in these sort of things, but they've never really held a title for any length of time, you know.
You got me. I don't know.
The next couple of years are going to be quite interesting, I think, in terms of TV.
See what drops off and what stays. And, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
especially after the Infinity War, I feel like Marvel got to be very careful the way this is handled, because they look like they're going to be clearing the decks a little and seeing where they go from there, but I hope they don't do it in such a way that it feels like a finality to it.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to be careful, because I know S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s figures have been dropping. Mm. I enjoy it. I like it. And I know that the Inhumans was a bit of a miss, wasn't it, I think?
That really fucked up, I think. I didn't watch it. But
I watched it all. It was a very strange, just like a lot of people running about in Hawaii.
Odd.
Who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah.
And none of them had a helicopter, and none of them had two Dobermen.
Yeah.
Legion series 2 is coming back, which I can't wait for.
I'm looking forward to that.
That was fucking brilliant, that first series.
Yeah. I also on the note of Infinity War, I've already got my tickets. I can't wait.
Oh yeah, you said Cillian.
Yeah, we've already. I've booked mine up. Yeah. Well, my wife booked them up.
Yeah. So got to do the old midnight showing.
Midnight Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going Thursday at something.
Well, it'll be Thursday morning essentially.
What's the date of that?
25th,
is it?
25th. Oh god, yeah.
April.
Yeah, 26th of April. That's when.
Yeah. So,
okay. Yeah.
You'll be making your way there on the 25th, late.
Yeah.
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 Sit down.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
I'm gonna go and put Black Widow.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Oops.
I'm gonna go as Lady Death. No. do we have any shout outs, gents?
I've got a couple.
Yeah, go for it.
First up is Saturday. By the time you hear this, the next event for us is Saturday the 24th. It's a small press event in Swindon at the Incredible Comic Shop, which is 21 Brunel Plaza, SN1 1LF. So it's the top floor of the shopping centre there. Organised by Sarah Harris, friend of the show. We're going to be there. Sorry about that, Sarah. it's going to be between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. The Wine and Zine Girls, Claire Spiller and Jess Leslau are going to be there. David Leach, who's an editor at Titan and also a comic maker, the Troublemakers, that are Madius, are going to be there. Steve Sims from Battle Badgers and Suze Gander, who's Periwinkle and a little project that her and I've got on the go, amongst other things, are all going to be there. So it's all of us going to be crammed into actually quite a big shop, isn't it? The Incredible Comic Shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, should be pretty good. It was a cracking event last year. Come along this year because it's going to be a good laugh. And we're really looking forward to it. We're going to have possibly a new Cockney Kung Fu print. We're going to have issues of our comic. And Vince, you're going to have your book there for sale.
Yes, I'm going to have a few copies of my novel.
Yeah, that's one.
So there you go. It's going to be a fun old day. I can't wait for it. It's going to be good, actually. I've got a little shout out. I just want to give a shout out to Rob Carter of the Analog Press. Yes, he got in touch with us because the latest issue of Radio On, which is Radio On Broadcast number 4.
Thorpe is in that, isn't he?
Yep, he is indeed.
Yeah, cool.
Amongst a whole bunch of brilliant artists. Now there's seven stories in total from what I see here, and it looks amazing. And Rob's got in touch. We'll probably be speaking about it quite soon because he's very kindly put a couple of copies in the post for us.
Nice.
And this looks amazing. It's out now. If you want to get your hands on it, because I know Radio On is a nice looking publication, I will say that. You can get it from theanalogpress.bigcartel.com, and it's £4. There you go.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
I've got one more. Unless you have, Dan, you got one?
Well, just saying, speaking of Big Cartel,
yep.
You can still get copies of the awesome comic.
Yeah,
issue 1 from our Big Cartel store. We made a few more sales during the week, so
nice.
This is another popping down to the post office me next week.
Nice.
So
cool.
We got digital's only a quid and the print copies £3.
Real. Yeah.
Get yourself excited for the next issue, which is coming soon.
Ooh. Yeah, we're going to print very soon on that one. I've just a little thanks to Bob Turner. I reviewed his comic Untitled, which is out anytime now and is absolutely brilliant. Go to neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk and you'll see the review. And I noticed that there was something that he had produced that I didn't own a copy of, which is very unlike me because I love Bob's stuff. So I sent off for his Inktober book, full of sort of woodcutty drawings, really, really nice stuff. And he very kindly sent me the art for the cover of Untitled, which was really generous of him. And I'm about to get framed. Gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. Experimental, abstract, interesting. Bob is always a really interesting creator that everyone should have a look at. His books Flood and stuff like that, really, really good stuff. Yeah, there you go, that's my one.
Nice. So are we going
to
announce the winner of our competition this week?
Oh, I haven't looked at it.
No, let's do one more week because we're completely and utterly unprepared.
We're going to do one more week, so, and next week is a Three Amigos show.
We can read that out and read some of the other ones out there, can't we?
Yes. Yeah. So the best possible time now to send your entries to get a year subscription to Comic House is to answer one simple question. What's that, Tony?
Who would each of us ideally go on a date with? Now, that can be imaginary people, people from history, famous people, comic characters, whoever you can think, inanimate objects, animals, houses, vehicles, anything you like.
Write it in an
amusing email. We have had some proper sick emails, which I appreciate a lot. Thank you very much.
There's been some cracking ones. If you want to answer the competition, being with a chance of winning, then send an email to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and we will read out a few and the winner next week.
Yes.
So there you go. Now, This week we've had some wonderful announcements. We've had some bit of a geeky TV and movie talk, which we hadn't done for a little while, and we've had an amazing interview with the creators of Eternal. So how do you finish off a show like this? Well, with the recommendations, of course. We have them every week. And it's a Sunday night and we're all a little bit tired, but we've still got more in the tank for you, and we've got some great books this week. So who wants to go first?
Go on, you go first, V.
Well, this one is one that I picked up on Comixology. Yeah, again, we've mentioned that they should probably sponsor us this week because we've been talking about it so much. I picked it up, volume one of this, for just $2.99. It's four issues of Street Tiger, which is a weird revenge thriller. This is what it calls itself. Now, this is by Tito Montana, and the translation is from Emma Charlotte Sancho Coleman. I think I've got that right.
That's a cool name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she did cracking work on the translation, I will say that. Mm. Now, the basic setup is this. A series of brutal murders are occurring in Nam City. All the victims belong to different criminal organisations. The police suspect a gang war, but they are searching for a sole individual. A man with a helmet and a leather jacket with a tiger on the back. Oh, yes.
No.
Yeah. Yes. This, as it says on the back as well, it's a thriller that's full of action and violence that will take you back to the 80s exploitation movies. When I read that line, I thought, I think Dan and Tony are like this.
Yeah.
So I gifted them with a copy. Yeah.
I've been reading it this afternoon.
Yes. Yeah. This is a book that it kind of treats itself, and it likes to talk about itself, as if it's the sort of comic book that Quentin Tarantino would have made. I can see that comparison more so if you sort of look to the Kill Bill side of his filmography, I would say.
Yeah.
More on that side. But not necessarily to the other, you know, like Jackie Brown's or whatever. But this has definitely got that sort of grindhouse, Pulp Fiction-y kind of vibe to it. The script is absolutely packed with wit, one-liners, and some great jokes that hit the mark, which some of them are physical jokes as well. But the one example is a great moment where someone calls the police during a brutal fight between two characters. I think I tweeted it. I sent the picture to you guys as well. The Pizza Hut line. It's a small moment that I think really elevated the scene. It didn't take away from the action, but it did make me laugh out loud. So, and this book definitely has that sort of sense of levity that I think elevates it from a lot of similar books that try to do the grindhouse style story, because ever since those films came out, how many comic books have tried to go to the grindhouse world?
It is a little bit of an easy option, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'll be honest, a lot of them aren't for me. I think sometimes it's just an excuse to make something maybe shocking or exploitative that doesn't really have a story with it. But this is wears its heart on its sleeve, and it's cracking. I think it's born of such sort of action influences, that sort of genre, but you see more probably in the presentation cover wise than anything else. You know, as soon as you look at the cover, you think of grindhouse or that sort of stuff. But internally, I will say it's a whole different ball game, and it's not what you expect. Now, Tito's artwork, it isn't necessarily something that I would immediately think of for a full-on brutally ass-kicking revenge story. It's more like a sort of style I'd see in like Slice of Life books or something that guys like Avery Hill or Good Comics would put out. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's more sort of indie, isn't it? Arty sort of.
It's definitely an arty sort of style. It's quirky, different, but I will say it has an absolute confidence in itself that I love. I mean, certainly when I told one friend about it, I said, oh, this book's great, and I showed him a couple of panels, he was like, oh, interesting. It's that it has that. I think it takes you a couple of panels to get into, because you think, this is going to be, you know, you think you're going to go in all guns blazing with just brutality and over the top gore, and this does it differently. So after a couple of pages of getting used to it, I actually found myself more invested than maybe I would have been if it was sort of a more mainstream style.
We were saying it reminded a bit me and Dan, I think, and you, a bit of Carl Starks.
Completely, yeah.
If you're
a fan of like Carl Starks and obviously Rock Candy Mountain and Kill 'Em All and Sex Castle, that's the one that a lot of people are high praise. Yeah, it's got, you know, that style that you kind of don't expect for something when you think of like, you know, the 80s action influences. But because of that, I think it's got more character and is better for it. And also, I will say, he paces out. There's proper fights in this, and he paces them out brilliantly. So, and he uses panels to focus on like individual punches and breaking. He breaks down a corridor fight, so you can see every sort of henchman get the kicking that they deserve.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's not one of those ones where one panel is the fight. No, he's gonna show you all of it. It's not an all ages book. I will say that there's not much in the way of cursing.
Right.
But hands are blown off. There's bones broken, broken glass gets thrown in someone's face, and there's a particularly lovely moment where someone gets a shotgun blast to their head, which sounds more gruesome than it is, because the art, it's more like sort of balloons full of paint popping than like over the top detailed gore. It made me laugh at the same time of thinking, cool, that's pretty full on. The story, but the art aside, story and script is great. We're all action movie fans on this show, so we can tell when a writer knows their action movie shit. And this story definitely does. He leans into the cliches, adds some extra flavour, and there's and proper comic book stylings, but he also writes some damn good dialogue. I mean, one of my favourites is the villain, who's called Egghead. He has some brilliant monologues that reminded me of, like, great action movie villains always have great action movie monologues, don't they? They love to have a bit of a chat, and, like, just normally just before they kill someone, like a henchman. And this guy has some great dialogue, and yes, his shape, his head is actually sort of shaped like an egg, which turns into a twist at the end that you really don't expect. And this story does have twists and turns. I haven't even mentioned the side plot with a police investigation. There's some petty criminals who uncover something very mysterious, and an amazing supporting character who's a female ninja who calls herself the Black Pigeon. So this is all. This is there's so much. To
I
this
like
comic.
A pigeon.
Exactly, exactly. And this, there's so much to this story, but it's still a rollicking good time. Some of it reminded me. Some of the scenes. Have you seen the Raid 2?
Yes.
No, not yet. No.
There's a one of the fight scenes reminded me. In a corridor, the main character fights someone with like two hammers, and there's another guy with a baseball bat. Do you remember that, Dan?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, the way. I don't know, the way that feels and the way that's shot, some of the action in this book kind of reminded me of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's definitely well worth your time. It's the sort of book that, if it arrived on the UK indie scene, like out of nowhere, tons of people will be talking about it without a shadow of doubt, and totally getting on board.
Oddly, Volume 2's on Comic House, but not
well,
one.
Well,
yeah, I thought that was strange, yeah.
It's issue 2. This is the thing. Comic House, if you want to check out and test it, issue 2 of the comic is on Comic House now. But the whole collection you can get on Comixology for $2.99. So if you want to test it, see what it's like. Because there's a great fight in issue 2 with a guy with a false jaw. He's got like a metal jaw.
Oh, Yeah.
So, yeah, check it out on Comic House. Then pick up the full one. It's black and white. One. Black and white, 120 pages. And well worth your time. So there you go. That's Street Tiger, Volume 1. And I think there's going to be more to come because it seems like he's sowing the seeds for further stories, which is great. So there you go.
Cool.
Awesome.
Who's going to go
nice
next?
Nice one.
I've not read too many comics this week. I've gone over a couple of old ones, but I've started rereading Dune. And
I love that book. That's one of my favourite books. I read that every couple of years, dude. I love it.
I think I've kind of watched the film. At least once a year, and I just kind of thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to give that another reread because I like it so much. It's such a good book, and they do say stuff about it being unfilmable, but there's so much in it. It's very dense.
Yeah.
To try and bring it all together is just, well, Lynch kind of, I think a lot of people don't like that film. I quite like it.
I love it. It's one of my favourite films. I think people don't get it, I think it's a problem. And people go, oh, is that the one with Sting in? And you feel like killing yourself because Sting's in it for about a minute.
Yeah, it's kind of essentially, it's weird because I remember reading up on it, and they made it, when they first released the film, they made a big deal because Sting was big at the time. So, look, Sting's in this, but he does nothing.
Yeah.
He's in it.
We were talking in the interview as well with Ryan and Deeb about, I was saying I love a monologue. And the way that they do the, they have dialogue in the Dune book, but they also in italics have what they're thinking.
Yeah,
and it's ever so clever like that. It's one of the cleverest books for that. You know, it really is.
It's got that thing that comics do when like two characters have kind of talking to each other, but they've got the speech bubbles of them what they're actually thinking.
Yeah, the thought bubbles. Yeah.
It is that thing that comes from the book. Is the plans within plans? Everyone's got kind of ulterior motives within ulterior motives, and they're all playing off each other, and it's really well written.
Yeah, and here's a pop quiz. Who drew the comic? The adaption.
Is it Bill
Sienkiewicz?
Yeah. It's gorgeous, mate. It's so worth picking up. There's a sort of Marvel sort of magazine size version of it. It's gorgeous. Yeah, really, really nice. Yeah.
Is that readily available? Can you find that in like sort of sales and like back issue bins and stuff like that?
I got it. I think it was $20. I got it for in New York. Yeah, it's not like unfindable by any stretch. Nice. It's actually all right. And as you well know, I bought a Paul Atreides. Now sitting
those,
on my desk.
Seeing the action figures, they kind of like, I just think the marketing department really misunderstood.
Yeah, they completely did, didn't they?
You tried to make it like a Star Wars thing. It's like, this isn't a Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
So seeing that toy catalogue with all the figures is just, well, I can remember my cousins had some, my older cousins. They'd been to the cinema and they'd come back with these figures, and it's very odd.
It's one of those books. I read it when I was sort of 12, 13, and then I just tore through the first six books. Because Frank Herbert wrote the first six, and then his son, many, many years later, after he passed away, his son came in, I think with Kevin Anderson, I think, is that his name? He wrote, I think there's about 12, 13, 14 of them, and I've read about 10 of them, and they're all so good. They're not about sci-fi. People make the mistake. They're about politics.
Yeah.
And they're also where I first heard words like jihad and all this sort of thing, you know, that you now get in Islamic fundamentalism and stuff like that. He was so tapped into the sort of political situation in the world, Herbert. It's a really interesting experiment. I know Jonathan Hickman cites it as a huge influence, and so does, what's his name, who wrote Game of Thrones. He cites it as an influence.
Yeah, because Game of Thrones is politics.
Yeah, and you look at the opening of the Lynch movie and you look at the opening of Game of Thrones, there's a lot of similarities there. That's all I'm saying.
Awesome.
Good.
Interesting. Yeah, cool.
The spice must flow.
Yeah. And I actually did put up on Twitter this week that I did a poo that looked like Shea Halud.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely. You keep it classy, don't you?
Yeah.
So what, little maker.
What book have you got? What book have you got, Tony? I saw you post up a picture that certainly got me intrigued.
Yeah, that is some weird fucking freaky shit. And if anyone's in the Facebook group, go and have a look, because I posted up some panels. Got a bit of attention, actually, because it is so strange. I was on the phone to Harry Marcos yesterday. Anyone who doesn't know Harry is is he the managing or the owner, publisher and managing partner of Marcosia Comics, Marcosia Enterprises, who we've not talked enough about, actually. They're a regular British indie comic publisher, and I think we've only really talked about that book from Side Z and maybe a couple of other things that have come out from them. And he said he's got a book coming out that comes out on the 9th of April. He said he's right up my street, because he knows I like the sort of the weird and, you know, the strange sort of stuff. And this is Mycelium Seep, which is a very weird name for a book. It's by an Israeli creator called Nir Levy, L-E-V-I-E. And it's translated by Dekel Oved. And it is probably one of the weirdest reading experiences I've had for a good time. The cover is this. It's a black and white comic. It's 125 pages. The cover is a combination of... it's an alien landscape done unlike any sort of regular alien landscape you see in comics generally. And it's kind of a mixture between castle turrets and psilocybin mushrooms, if you think of that as the sort of shape of these buildings, you know. And amongst it are these sort of strange creatures running in sort of, some of them are sort of insectoid, some of them are sort of humanoid with some feathers and trees growing out of them and just weird holes in them. You know, it's not a normal reading experience, this is. Page one is a mass of a stream of consciousness writing and text, and that sort of slowly gathers itself into and becomes an alien type, alien sort of text. It's really is something from a fractured mind. It's very strange. It differentiates fiction and fantasy, and it plays very much with a number of notions, including identity and reality. There's a strange, in this sort of middle of this text page, is a strange sort of orb of a strange material that is sort of part organic, part crafted, part wood, part skin, and just like really, really nightmarish, you know. And then you're sort of thrown into this office block, and it's sort of, you know, do you remember those old drawings you used to get in old British annuals? This is Thunderbird 2, a cross-section of Thunderbird 2. And you say, this is, you know, that sort of thing. It's like they've cross-sectioned the office building, and it looks like an ant colony. You know, all these desks and people sitting at their desks and people trailing in and out of the building and cars driving up and down the road outside. And it's an overhead view of this building that makes it look like this sort of regimented and organized sort of building for ants almost. there's a woman who's in there, and she's almost a central character. I say almost because it's hard to work out who is the central character in this. And she decides to head home. And so she heads home to sort of a real sort of inner city urban area, which has got this sort of high crisscrossing, hard-edged, rectangle office buildings that is nothing like what you see on the cover, what is inviting you in. But you begin to realize that the buildings have this sort of skeletoid, organic area to them, and the root that these sort of plants are rooted around them. And you then get this really strange motif that you go back to. You get a point of view of someone pissing on the floor and like a pool of piss on the floor. It's very strange. And you begin to realize that this is a book about the sort of creeping threat of madness, and infection, and rotting, twisting sort of sickness. It's downright fucking unsettling. You know, it really is. The world sort of shifts and grows around you as you read it. And it is extremely transformative in that sort of way. So around the halfway mark in the book, you see that the creature, the one that I posted the image of on the Facebook page, the one with the sort of...
The nightmare-inducing creature.
It's like a weird face turned sideways of a human cross with an owl. It's really strange.
I'll tell you what it is. It's a cheese dream. That's what it is. When you have too much cheese and go to sleep.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is a big acid trip. It really is. Although Sarah Dunkerton summed it up she said, "I'm both fascinated and horrified, intrigued and unsettled." And I said, "Oh, do you mind if I quote you?" You know, and that's kind of how I feel about the whole issue. It is very strange. But with the appearance of this creature, you get a strange, who's got this sort of strange sideways owl-like face. And also, it's got rather too much junk in the trunk. Is that what the kids say these days? Do you know what I mean?
Sorry. You mean it's got a big butt?
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't lie. But it's got this sort of weird satirical side to it about modern life, maybe. Or maybe I'm sort of seeing a little bit too much into it, but this sort of, you're chasing this strange, nightmarish creature. I mean, there's a lot of dongs in it as well, to be fair. So this creature that appears, if you look at the next panel from the one I posted, it's got this, I don't know, it's hard to tell. It pulls something out of its face that is either a sort of worm with legs or an organ. It is just fucking weird. And what it does, it then it flips backwards and forwards like an acid sort of flashback between the square regimented urban living that I mentioned in a second ago to the other world with this sort of, it's like an overgrown tree that has got seeping holes in it that are in a weird square-like way sexual organs, I'm going to say, somehow.
Do you know what? It was bad enough. I never want to hear you say seeping holes to me ever again.
That's our punk band, I've told you.
No, that's sex reason.
Sex reason. And our first song, Seeping Holes. But you get this, as you go through the book, I'm not going to spoil anything, but well, it's hard to spoil because it's so fucked up. You get more into the themes of it. You get the duality and the messages of freedom, of consciousness and unconsciousness, thought and the escape of this character. You get rebellion. You get not belonging to a society that you are sort of tied into. You get the paranoid of the, you know, paranoid dreams, and you get life and death, escape, freedom, and all different things. It is 125 pages of a comic that I've read it a couple of times now, cannot understand. I really don't understand it. It's 125 pages of comic that I'm kind of almost glad that I don't understand. It's just, oh, I yeah. like the fact that it's sort of this growing organic thing on a page. It's got moments of it are seemingly underground. You know, the sort of amateurish quality you get of, or the almost pretend amateurish quality you get of an underground comic, you know, like comics for the next type stuff. It's got that, but it's done with sort of some strange themes. Very, very weird. I wouldn't want to meet this geezer who's created in a dark alley. I've got to be honest with you. He's actually an architect, I was reading. You know, he's actually sort of this genuine, sort of interestingly professional guy. It skips about all over the place. Don't expect loads of sort of pre-planned structure. Don't expect to, you know, what we're used to with our comics these days, our sort of pristine, clean, you know, highly worked comics. It just goes all over the place. But it's worth a read, I think. It genuinely is. It is strange and grotesque. And I shall read it again, and I shall probably see a lot more in it. There's a pile of text towards the end, which kind of every so often you get some text, and it kind of strangely sums up little bits of it and gets you thinking about stuff. And it says, "I'm a multi-dimensional being. I'm a manifold of awareness. I am their past, and I am their presence." And it's just this sort of strange stuff. It's just, it is a real total head fuck, like from start to finish. It's really unlike most of what Marcosia does. Marcosia has, you know, it does sci-fi, it does horror, it does superhero stuff, but it doesn't really reach often into these sort of experimental areas that we would more commonly see from someone like you mentioned, like Avery Hill or someone like that. You know, it's very much more on that tip. And I like to think that, and Harry was very interested in mentioning it to me, and I think he's done the right thing. And I think I it's the sort of comic that I would definitely enjoy. It's, as I say, it's released on the 9th of April. Yeah, Ner Levy is an architect, an artist, and a designer from Israel. If you go to www.marcosia.com or go to @Marcosia, which is M-A-R-K-O-S-I-A on Twitter, or you can find Ner Levy at N-I-R-L-E-V-I-E at Ner Levy on Twitter, or www.nerlevy.com. It's an experience, put it that way. Yeah,
that's fun.
It's a bit different. As soon as I saw it, I said, right, this is up my street. I'm going to talk about this on the show. Yeah. Mm. There you go.
Blimey.
Check that one out.
There is literally something for everyone on this show.
This is going to be a big old show, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's been an epic one. And we hope that you've all enjoyed it. We certainly have enjoyed it. It's been fun to just sit and chat to the guys tonight.
Yeah.
You
got some more of that next week.
You do have some more of that next week. So look forward to that. We've got some ideas of what we're going to talk about next week, which we're going to talk about after the show. But you're not privy to that, so you're not going to know. So there you go. But what do you think we're going to talk about? Well, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to let us know. You could email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Get your entries in for the competition at tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where we will be putting up polls, asking questions. Kickstarter call out on Thursday. That's where you want to get in touch with us then. And we've had some amazing guests over the past month or so. Well, all of our guests are amazing, but
we've knocked it out of the park recently, dude, didn't we? Movie stars, American podcasters and artists, and it's all over the place, isn't it? Yeah,
and we've got some more exciting guests to come.
So, we have, haven't we?
Tuned for that. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you're on Facebook, if you do the Facebook, not everyone does, but if you do, and you do the group thing, then certainly you've got to join the best group on Facebook, which is Awesome Comics Talk. We've had a bevy of new people join recently and getting involved. I've seen some people get involved on conversations that I don't necessarily recognise, you know, who's posting, which is great.
Yeah. A lot of advice being given, a lot of good advice, sensible people. We've not had a proper argument on there yet, which I'm pleased about.
Yeah.
We've had like a lot of people saying, "Oh, I'm doing this page. Anyone give me advice?" And people are going, "Oh, thanks for the help." And it's like proper good. Nice.
Yeah. There's great stuff on there, so definitely check it out. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, if you listen to us there, or on iTunes. Leave us a review, helps get the word out. I know there's quite a few people who leave us on iTunes. Another show, I'm just quickly going to give a shout out to the Alpha Pod Flight show.
Yeah.
Which I listen to on iTunes, because Gareth, you're putting out a great show. Just want you to know that.
I'm getting stuck in.
So listen to us on iTunes. You can also find us on the Stitcher Network, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, interestingly, I've been in Plymouth this week.
Here we go.
I was standing at the dockside with a couple of friends, and there was this, I don't know if you know what seagulls are like at the seaside. There was huge ones, aren't they? Bigger, aren't they, seemingly? And I looked at this rather attractive seagull, and I turned to my friend and I said, "I know you quite well now. You fucked a seagull, haven't you?" And he went, "Maybe," like that. So I'm going to say Pod Seagull this week.
Was that just an excuse to get that seagull story in?
Yeah, it was really. Yeah,
kind of worked.
I thought you were going to say pod gull or gulling or something like
sea-gulling.
That. Sea gulling. No, that's something else entirely. Yes, it's been an epic show, and thank you for listening to us, folks. Now, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Please sign up to www.tinyletter.com/cockneykungfu. Me and Nick are putting a lot of effort into our articles, and I've got, I'm quite pleased with the one this week. And we're obviously running up now to the print deadline for the new issue of the anthology. So Nick will, I'm sure, be putting some stuff up there. He has killed it on his Kickstarter for Slang Pictorial. But please, there's still time to go and put some money on that one, pledge on that one. Looking gorgeous stuff. Or find me at neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. There you go.
Nice, damn.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I think the last two pages of which are going to go up this week of issue 14.
Nice. Cool. Yeah.
I feel a little bit of burnt out, to be fair. I'll kind of need days off to do fucking
It's been a really good issue, I will say that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Really good.
Plus, we'll G you up at Swindon, won't we? We'll give you a cuddle.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. you can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Thank you again to Ryan and Dee for joining us for this week's show. And get well soon, Eric. And be sure to check out their mailers and get your hands on a copy of Eternal as well. Well worth it. So there you go. Thank you for listening as always. And from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Read lots of comics. Keep your eyes open for more sales.
Yep.
And, hopefully see you in Swindon. And as always, what should they do, lads?
Stay awesome.
Thank you, Dan.
I'm going to try to be my...
I felt a bit self-conscious there. I didn't want to do it.
When have you ever felt self-conscious, Tony? Disgraceful. Do you know what? Tony has to say it on his own now. So have a brilliant week, folks.
No, don't make me say it.
Have a brilliant week, folks. And as always, what do they have to do, Tony?
Stay awesome.
See ya.
See ya.
You're a bully.
You love it.